that we this 9 o'clock call meeting to order. Before we begin the actual meeting, let me just read some information for you all. Good morning. The Toyoak Community Services District welcomes you all to this meeting. Truly mean that. Thank you for coming. For those of you who are attending in person, facial coverings are required for any person who is not fully vaccinated. Your input is extremely important to us, and we will work to ensure that all questions or comments will be addressed. If you have a public comment and you're using a computer, a tablet, or smartphone from home or from a distant place, the process is to click on the participant list on the bottom of the Zoom screen. This will open a pop-out that includes raise hand icon that you may use to raise a virtual hand. Once I see a raised hand, I will see it. Kim will see a raised hand. I will be notified to be unmuted and given the opportunity to make a comment or ask a question. You can also ask a question and make a comment by typing it into the Q&A box. Persons speaking during public comment will be limited to 5 minutes, or depending on the number of persons wishing to speak, it may be reduced to allow all members of the public an opportunity to address the board. If you have called in and would like to make a comment, please dial *9 and I'll identify once you've been unmuted and you're given the opportunity to ask a question. The meeting today is also being carried by Zoom, but today it's being done audio only. And just for your information, today's meeting will be recorded. Okay, with that, I invite you all to stand and join me in the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice.
Thank you. And we have a roll call. Here.
Director Mannix?
Here.
Director Bowman?
Here.
Director Newsom?
Here.
And Director DeGroote?
Here.
Okay, thank you. It is the mission of the Twin Heart Community Services District to provide quality and efficient services to our community in a professional, reliable, and fiscally responsible manner. That's a mission we take very seriously. We do that at every meeting. Okay, this is the time and in the meeting where anyone either here or on Zoom is free to make any comment about anything concerning the CSD that is not on today's agenda. If it's on the agenda, we'd ask you to hold off and discuss it then. But if you have any comments that you'd like to make about anything other than what's on the agenda, you feel free to do that. And just to let you know, anyone who wants to make a comment now or later during the meeting, I'm going to ask you to sit in that chair there. It's not electrified, really. Because the microphone is closed so that anybody who is zooming in can hear what you have to say. Okay, with that, presentations.
Can you bring up public comment?
Oh, thank you. I asked for that. I didn't give you a chance to do that. Does anyone want to make public comment? Anyone? Do we have anyone zooming in? Okay, good, good. And just to let everybody know, I'm just tickled to death that we have folks here. I think it's wonderful to have people that are involved in the community. I mean, a lot of you are here for the best thing, but for other people who are here for the Western meeting, I'm very grateful for that. We love it. Thank you for being here. Public comment. Anybody? Here? There? Anyone?
So I don't want to see the agenda, but to talk about the potential access for shadow bond.
That's on the agenda. Okay. Yeah, it's on the agenda.
It is.
Yeah.
There's a difference right there.
Oh. Yeah, we will come to that in a little bit. Anyone with a public comment here or on Zoom? Okay. With that, we will move on to presentations. Badge pending a volunteer firefighter intern.
Do you mind if I stand up here? Second base.
Yep.
Do you want me out of here?
No, right here.
Sure. Wherever you're comfortable.
Okay. Good morning. Morning. It is my distinguished honor and pleasure to highlight three of our interns, firefighter interns, after a year of pandemic. It's been about a year since we've successfully been able to do a in-person badge. So these three members that we're going to be presenting today have been through a grueling 6-month period of probationary, or what we call evaluation process, and completed it successfully. The first individual that we're going to present is Landon Bryant. Landon, please stand up. Landon is 19 years old. He's from the Tracy area. He graduated the Columbia College Fire Academy in 2020. He continues to pursue his associate's degree in fire science. He's currently enrolled in the EMT program with Murphy's, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. And he's also working towards his National Registry EMT certification. He will be promoted to intern operator once that is completed. He is, a little nervous, my first time, so. He would like to thank the department for his continuous training opportunities that he's been able to attend the classes that we host here and other classes around the area that we have sent him to find his skills and become a better candidate once he is able to test with other departments. Landon would also like to thank his father for being the biggest inspiration to the pursuit of his career in the fire service. Today, his dad, Captain Ryan from the Fremont Fire Department, will be attending.
The pins are tricky for anyone.
Feel free to come out of my eyes.
Draw blood. I think we got some EMTs.
Little boy. Put him on a massage.
Side note, Captain Bryant actually started his career with Twain Hart. What year?
It was about 28 years ago.
We've been full circle.
Yeah.
Mark Twain and Bret Hart were still there then.
The next intern we'd like to highlight is Jake Noonan. Jake, can you please stand? Jake is also a 2020 graduate of the Columbia College Fire Academy. He's been with the department since 2020. Jake has helped the department with his IT specialties, his artwork that he's, we didn't bring a picture of it, but if you're ever at the station, one of his projects, he did a nice art piece for the station. And Jake is currently working on his EMT as well, and his passion is to become an air taker pilot. He'd also like to thank his family for the support, and today, who's going to be sitting here?
Yeah.
There you go.
I think it's some sweet little story to tell you about him on. He's broken both femurs. He's broken his back. He's very strong now, though. broke his femur, and a couple days later, he wanted a wheelchair to go to Great America so he could get in all the lines quickly.
Wait a minute. The smile.
Congratulations. Last and certainly not least, our next intern, Jacob Tucker. Can you stand up and come forward, Jacob? Jacob's 24 years old. He is a born native of Swainheart. Moved up to the area from Ceres in 2018. Lives with his family currently in Miwok. He is continuing his degree and his associate's degree in fire science, working on his EMT, and his dream is to become a fire investigator. Today, Jacob will be getting pinned by Captain Jewel.
Stick to Jewel.
At least 3 nights, right?
Don't want to go through.
Actually, yeah.
Congratulations.
You know, again, I'm very proud and honored for all three of these gentlemen for giving passion and dedication to our department and making it a better place. So thank you for that. That's all.
Good job. Well, thank you. Hey, Kate, just to let you know, if you want to be a pilot, Swainheart has our own Air Force. They're drones.
Yeah, really.
Yes.
We have a comment from the public.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
Hi, this is Carol Hallett. I just wanted to congratulate the three interns for being pinned today and for being associated with one of the best fire departments in the county, maybe in the state, but I might be biased. But congratulations to all three of you. I look forward to working with you.
Thanks, Carol.
Thank you, Carol.
Looks like we have one other. Bruce, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. I'm over in Germany right now, and I've got a bad connection, and I'm supposed to be at dinner. Can I make a comment when this is over? Because I just missed a public comment because I couldn't get connected.
If it's something related to what's on the agenda, we have to wait until that point. If it's just a public comment about other things that the CSD is involved with that aren't on the agenda, please go ahead.
It's not that.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to comment that I didn't want my presentation to be on the agenda this week, and so I'm not going to be talking about that. But I tried to explain that I wouldn't be available. I had maps, et cetera, to present, and I couldn't do it. I specifically asked not to be on it, and I'm the only one here in terms of ideas received from a local resident. Well, I'm not going to be able to give them today because I can't. So that's all I have to say. I don't like having to break up my dinner to do this, and I don't see this as this is a customer-friendly situation. This could have been done next month or the month after. Thank you.
Okay.
Then we will go to, where are we?
You might want to tell me.
Say again. Oh, yes. Those of you who came for the pinning, you have to stay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. we are going to a public hearing. Presentation regarding the delinquent water and sewer bills on Flowing County property tax roll. Mr. Trott.
Yes.
Hello, some strange to be right here. So what I'm going to be talking about today, just to keep it quick, but as you know, we as a district have water and sewer services, and we bill our customers for those services. And we have several means in which we try to collect those payments, essentially. And for the most part, those means are very, they work. We have gotten to a point with several accounts where we have gone through all of our means, which is trying to set up payment plans. We also have the ability to place liens on properties so that when the properties sell, we can collect those charges that are outstanding. Occasionally, what that does, though, is that we have to wait for properties to sell in order for that to happen. And so we do have one other way of collecting that money, which we haven't pursued in the past, but we've gotten to the point where we decided that this may be a way that we should. And so that's what we're presenting to the board today, is that the way that we can. And so what the CSD law allows us to do is to actually place those delinquent charges on property tax bills themselves. So the board will, we present a report to you of those accounts, and we notify at a public hearing, we put notices in the newspaper, as well as notify those property owners that today we would be discussing this, and that they can present any protests or any comments that they have. And then you decide as a board whether or not we want to place those on the property tax bills for the county to collect for us with property taxes. So that's what this resolution is talking about, the ways that we can do that, basically what I just described, that we have to notify this public hearing so that people can protest, make comments as they see fit, and then also to present the list to you. But I think you have it in front of you on your iPad. And so basically it's four accounts, and it lists the charges that we would be submitting to the county to be collected with the property taxes. And just so you know, these are accounts that their balances are at least 2 months old as of June 30th. Many of them are much older than that. So does anybody have any questions about that, and or if we have any comments from the audience?
Yeah, this is a public hearing. This is sort of technicality. This is a special part of a general meeting, a public hearing that is open to the public either here or on Zoom. If there's any comments about the nothing up there. Okay. Then if there are no comments from the public, we will close this part of the public hearing, and we will go to discussion or action to adopt Resolution 2121. Authorizing the district staff to place delinquent water and sewer charges on the 2122 Tuolumne County secured property tax bill. Any comments from the board? Any questions?
I only have one question, Chairman. How does a bill get to be so large as one of these items? How does that happen over time? That's got to be years and years and years.
Years and years and years. Years
and they refuse to.
It's an interesting situation. We've never heard anything. Water is turned off. We just don't know if the property is not in use, or I would assume so, considering there's not any water to the property.
Is the water turned off, or with a restrictor?
I believe this one may be turned off because it was turned off
before
the property is basically abandoned at this point.
That's what it appears to be. Yes. Okay. But we've never heard any comments. We've never heard any.
In years. It has to be years to be there.
I looked at the balance. This actually existed before our accounting system that we have, that we got in 2007, was implemented. So there's
from way back when.
Way back when.
So this also just goes to show you that, you know, we've historically put liens, but you don't collect from liens unless the property sells.
Correct.
Right.
So this gives the ability to collect more on a yearly basis.
Seems to be a more
That makes it more current for us for the payments to do it that way.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The yearly tax.
Any other questions, thoughts, comments? Then I'm looking for a motion to adopt Resolution 2121.
I'll move that we adopt Resolution 2121.
I seconded.
Okay. Thank you.
I've got a motion from Director DeGroote and a second from Director Newson. I'll do a roll call. Director Mannix?
Yes.
Director DeGroote?
Yes.
Director Bowman?
Yes.
Director Cipperly?
Yes.
And Director Newson?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Now we have the consent agenda, and this month's consent agenda consists of presentation and approval of the financial statements through June 30th, approval of the minutes of the regular meeting held on June 9th, approval of the minutes of the special meeting held on June 30th, adoption of Resolution 2122, tax requirement for Davis Grunsky contract number so-and-so, and adoption of Resolution 2123, tax requirement for Davis Grunsky contract. Different one. Carolyn, would you please just throw a few words out about Davis Grunsky?
Oh, sure, absolutely. Davis Grunsky, if you're not familiar with, is basically an act back in 1974 that allowed us to basically get loans for major water system improvements. And so we've been paying on those loans all these years, but each year we place the same amount that we have to pay for those loans on the property tax bills. So that's what these resolutions do each year, is basically say, yes, we want to do that again this year. We want to place the amount of payment that we pay for loan on the property tax bills. And that's been happening since 1974. But each year we need to do that, and then we submit it to the county so that it's based on the property tax bills. This is actually the last year that we have to do this. So our loans will be paid off.
Awesome.
Yeah. Okay. I like it.
Thank you for explaining.
Yeah.
Go.
One thing to know is I just wanted to bring your attention to the financials for just a brief moment. I don't know if any board members have questions on it, but I just wanted to point something out in case you did have a question. This is through the end of our fiscal year. So our fiscal year ended June 30th, and this is a very broad look at the expense side of our financials only. So it just shows you by a service area where we are at currently. This is not our end result. It takes a while for us to actually close the books. And so this will continue to change, and then I'll present finals with much more detail, probably maybe August, maybe September board meeting, depending on when we get all of our stuff in. But one thing I just wanted to point out in case you had questions, because we're showing that fire is over budget as far as our expenses. And as you know, this happens some years because of strike team activity, and that's why this has happened. Basically, we have strike team related incidents for fire personnel. And as our board approved policy states, we can go ahead and pay those payroll expenses without board approval because it's emergency incidents, which we are then reimbursed by the state for. So although our expenses show that we're over budget, we're going to be reimbursed through the state. And it's always actually more than what our actual expenses are because of using our vehicles and things like that, they reimburse us for those as well. So it's showing that we're $20,000 over budget, but it is totally and completely related to strike team events. And specifically, actually this year was especially strange because our fire personnel went to Southern California to assist with pandemic medical center surge assistance in hospitals in Southern California. So there was a lot of activity related to that. So that's why that is over, in case anybody was wondering.
Good. Thank you. Any questions on any item on the consent agenda? Does anybody want to pull any item or discuss it further?
Okay.
Nobody from the public on Zoom.
Okay. In that case, I'll look for a motion.
I'll move that we adopt the consent agenda as presented. I'll second.
Okay. Got a motion from Director DeGroote and a second from Director Mannix. So I'll do a roll call. Director Newson?
Yes.
Director Cipperly?
Yes.
Director Bowman?
Yes.
Director DeGroote?
Yes.
And Director Mannix?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Moving on to new business. Discussion action regarding emergency egress, ingress at Shady Brook Drive. Before we get into this, I would just like to make something as clear as I possibly can. Under state law and under an action passed by the residents of Twain, The Twin Heart Community Service District is responsible for four specific things. We do water service, we do sewer service, we do fire protection, in which we have one of the best fire departments in the country, frankly, and we do parks and recreation. Those are the four things that we do. We don't do roads, we don't do street lighting, we don't do libraries, we don't do any of the other things that could be permitted under California state law. Those are the four things that the residents of this community have approved. That's what we do. So I just want to make sure everybody's on the same page there. And with that, Tom.
Thank you for coming, and this is why you're here to discuss this. Just to give you a little bit of background, we have a local resident who has brought up some concerns regarding egress on Shady Lake Drive, emergency egress. And as Director Sipperly mentioned, we're not in charge of roads. We don't do roads. We don't do access. But the reason that we're involved here is because we do own the upper Shady Brook Pond. So this parcel here is owned by us. And then we lease this lower portion of the pond on these two parcels. And these Shady Brook reservoirs that you may or may not know much about, or you may know quite a bit about them, these were built in the early 80s. The purpose of the reason they were built was for a backup water supply, and that's what they are used for primarily today. So this is our backup water supply for Twin Heart. Right in this location here, we have a pump station that pumps water out of the lower reservoir and up to our water plant. We also have a drinking water well right here. And this pump station here is also a hydropower facility. So we have the ability to be able to take water off the dish and make power with it. And then one other thing here is right at this upper dam here for the upper pond, we have a sewer lift station here. And a sewer lift station, essentially, what you try to do when you have sewer facilities is make it all run by gravity. You don't want to be using power if you don't have to, but in some instances you have to. So all of Wildwood and Shady Brook from probably this point on drain all the way down to here, and then it's caught here and pumped back up. So that's there. You may have seen that if you've been down there. As it stands right now, we have a gate across the upper dam to prevent access and fence, and then this whole area here is fenced for security for our drinking water. And so just to kind of summarize some of the concerns slash proposals, you heard Mr. Erickson on the phone saying that he's the one that made these proposals. He's not here to make them fully, so I am summarizing that I have heard. We've met with him a couple times now, and probably from some of you, we've received multiple different opinions and comments about this, and so that's the reason we're having this meeting. Again, we are not in charge of creating egress, but we're trying to decide whether or not we would like to be involved from a standpoint of access across our property, keeping our facilities secure. And kind of our general approach is, if there's anything that anyone brings up to us, if something within our jurisdiction we can help the community, we always take that into consideration. Our mission is to improve the quality of life in Twin Heart. I mean, our vision is any way that we can. So the proposals are, the first one is to create some type of access egress that would go across this upper dam and up to this kind of easement area here, up to Pinewood Lane and out to Middle Camp. That would involve removal of these fences and gates on either side of the dam, so that would have access across it at any given time. There's another proposal that that there would be some way of the public to be able to get through our security gate, which is located here, go down our driveway, past our pump station facility, and either go up through the chapel and the Pines property over to Tuolumne Road or Drive. Oh, I get those confused. Tuolumne Drive. Or come this way and then make their way all the way, build the road all the way over to Mark Twain. Now we have some concerns about these. Oh, one other one is there's a cul-de-sac at the end. The right of way or the actual public easement, this was called right of way, is 80 foot in diameter for that. And I can't remember how big it is now, but the proposal was move some of your fences and allow for a 80 foot turnaround to be created there, provide a better turnaround at the end. And then the last one is where our lift station is located. There is approximately 19 feet of roadway there, and county standard says minimum is 20 feet. And so the proposal was to move our lift station to provide for that 20 foot access. We have some concerns about the proposals, and as I'm sure you would like to express yours as well, I'll just go through ours real quickly. One is all these proposals require access to private property. As I mentioned, that's not what we do. Some of that property is our property, but that's a concern because it would require access through others' private property and buy-in and easements and things of that nature. A big concern of ours, the security of our facilities, were required by the State Water Resources Control Board and the Federal Energy Regulation Commission to protect hydropower and water drinking water facilities. And so that is a concern of ours. And then of course, we always have funding. It's always an issue. Who pays for this? How does it get paid for? We have a lot of, you saw from our budget, we have a lot of things that we're doing as far as fixing water lines, sewer lines, providing fire services, park services. And then it's feasibility. Can this even be constructed? And then another big concern of ours is effectiveness or safety. So for example, you can see from this aerial image, this area here is heavily wooded and dense. And this road here is actually fairly steep. From a fire perspective, and we're in charge of structure fire, not wildland fire, it's Cal Fire. Cal Fire is wildland. But from a fire perspective, you know, if you weren't able to get out this way on wildwood, it's going to be pretty bad and pretty smoky and pretty dense. And I'm not sure we would feel comfortable sending people into a very dense forested area. So there's those kinds of things to be considered. With that, I think I've probably talked enough. And so any of you who have comment, either online or here, if you would like, you can come up to the chair. I know that might feel a little uncomfortable, but that's just so people can hear you online as well. And then if you have a comment online, please raise your hands and we will make sure we announce and get to you.
Before we do that, I'd just like to make one comment to address Mr. Erickson's concerns about the date of this decision or this discussion. He was notified of this meeting and it would be on the agenda before he notified us that he would be out of the country. So that's the order of things that they occurred. So whoever would like to make a comment, please come on up. You're welcome to identify yourself if you want to, but you're certainly not required to.
Cheryl, I live on Shadybrook Drive. I wanted to just take my take on living on a dead-end street. This is my fifth house on a dead-end street. For 52 years, I have only lived on dead-end streets. I don't like traffic. I don't like theft, because they have another way out, except. So my concern is I bought it on the pretense of it being a dead-end street, and I want it to stay that way.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Anyone else?
Would you please read the letters that we submitted to you? You have access to read the letters
we submitted. We can. Would you like to do that?
Sure. Then we will read the letters.
Good morning. My name is Jim Harvey. I am the administrator of Chapel of Pines. I'm here to represent the church's interest or input. We received the document, and listening today, I guess I have a couple questions. These proposals were presented by Mr. Erickson. These are his ideas. There's no official agency or any kind of work that's been done to determine right away and things like that.
That's correct. These are not.
They're not on.
Not on.
Okay. So we can go on record as saying we are opposed to this. if there's more information to be given or provided, that would be helpful, you know, to make us more comfortable with that decision. But based on what I heard today, and I don't understand how they would, the exit, ingress, and egress would be tied into our property, the church's property, other than, I guess, through the parking lot or something. Do you have any details as far as...
That was one thing that was expressed. There hasn't been any walking roads or any drawings or anything like that. Part of the reason is because it's private property, and so that would be trespassing.
Okay. Well, from our perspective, given the layout of the property, we don't believe it's feasible to actually put in an access road that could be accommodating fire trucks of the size, dimensions, the sizes that they are, to be able to continue to use the parking lot at the parking and allow that to get trucks through there. So having said that, I guess we want to just go on record as we are opposed.
Question to you, sir. You said without any further study, what kind of study would you want?
Well, that's the thing. I guess I was expecting to see that there was some government agency who was buying into this or driving this or supporting it. And so that's what I mean by study is like this. There's some higher entity than the resident who's determining that they want to try to put it out.
Yeah, no, this is entirely driven by the resident. And from my personal take, I'm guessing that any kind of study like that would be fairly expensive. It has to be an engineering study. We have no money in the budget to do that. Once we did that, it becomes what would be our responsibility to fulfill once that got done. We don't do roads. We don't do...
It would be our responsibility to be county.
That's my point.
County roads.
That's
and county. My point. And we wouldn't be doing it.
Okay. How would this progress, or could it progress to the county for the county's review?
It could be taken directly to the county
by the resident. I see. Okay.
And I believe at some level it has been he's attempted to take him down there. So.
Okay. And at that point, this agency would be called for comment as well as
property owners. I'm sure.
And if any property owner was proposed, there is a way to take property through eminent domain. That's a pretty lengthy and involved process, and you have to really show a pretty high benefit.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. No one else here. Anyone online?
Well, hold on. There's more.
Oh. Julie, come on.
Well,
I'm going to follow your lead. Be fast.
This is Cowell. And I want to address the amount of easements I have on my property already. I provide the sewer and water up and down uplift next to the gentleman that we're addressing. That should not be imposed in at all because there are huge boulders in there that restrict any building or any access that way. You would have to tear down my garage to have access to the church property to build the road. People do drive up. That's why we have a thing that says, you know, end of road kind of thing over there. I have saved 3 kids from drowning in the pond before the fence was put up. The animals that are there get picked on, so they stay mostly in the pond, but some have mysteriously disappeared or died over the years. All of the accesses seem to be through my property, and that upsets me very much and would upset my husband, who has passed 10 years ago. I become very emotional. About this whole issue. I'm agreeable on fire things because my husband was an assistant fire chief. I have been trained through conversations with him because he was Cal Fire, he was Air Force Fire, he was City Fire and Cal Fire and City Fire again. So I have these things addressed. I had 3 cousins burned out at Paradise. One was a 911 operator, and she said the best thing people could do is, one, is always have your car facing out the direction. Do not park on the road easement. They said they had to push cars off because they were on and blocking, and another car would come along and there was problems. The other thing was to get the county to clear the trees over main roads, like walking on and stuff like that. And she said the best thing is if you can't drive out, you walk out to the nearest main road. I hiked up that new part at the end where the PG&E clear cut all the way up on the property up to creek and up. That's the second shortest distance. The first shortest distance is across the street from my property on Wildwood and up that house driveway and up. It's only, according to my little thing, it's 1 inch. It takes an inch and a half to 2 inches to get up through that clear cut, and you want to try walking up that to something else. The other one would really take a lot of construction to go across and go up. And then when I went up and checked at the end of Pinewood and the other part, it's so densely there, I would never go there. I mean, if you would get all the fall and debris and stuff. And I am concerned about people's safety. I mean, my husband and I both worked on different things. I would suggest, one is that we have the trees cut by the county back so that we have clearance, you know, if that neighborhood facilitates that. I don't think it's feasible going up through the church because of the density of the fallen trees and the greenery through there. And the only way we used to have out of there was by the children's playground, but that has deteriorated. So if you want to go that way, hold on to the fence and crawl up the side and hope you don't slip. I'm for doing something about our fire stuff and about reasonable ways to prevent it. I think you ought to need to look too at the ability of people to do this. I mean, some people go hiking, some people go climbing, and there's a difference. And I used to do rock climbing, but I'm not doing rock climbing anymore. I'm falling down the hill. So basically, I just need to have this looked from a very unemotional, because I get emotional because it's intruding on my life, and the noise and stuff like that, all the stuff and people being down there and doing things. The fire truck turns around, the garbage truck turns around. As Sarah was saying, I have other friends, I do projects for and stuff like that. They live in, and there's no cul-de-sac at the end of the street. There's another house. So I think we're very privileged to have the space that we do have. I don't think it's feasible to move two sewer substations that are down there, although we would like it because sometimes it is. But the water company has always been very original about that. And the fence is very important because we also lately have had kids climbing over the fence and swimming in the lawn. I'll share the show. So it's not the responsibility. So, all in all, that's it.
Thank you, Julie.
Thank you, Julie.
Okay. Anyone else would like to make a comment here in person or anyone else on the Zoom call?
You have to check the Zoom.
You have the.
Oh, I
just click the participant.
I don't see any hands raised. Would you like to read that?
Yeah. And we have five letters, I think.
Five written.
Yeah. Okay, the first one is from Bob and Janet White to Twenty North Community Services District, re-emergency ingress, egress on Shady Brook Drive. We have been owners of 23333 Shady Brook Drive for 25 years. We have never felt or even considered that we need additional ingress or egress from our property. Traffic volume is extremely low, and the street is actually wider than many streets in Twain Heart. Fire trucks have no problem accessing our street and turning around in our cul-de-sac. We've seen them do it many times. Fire department actually practices pumping water for fighting fires at Shady Brook Ponds. This is a ridiculous scenario to even consider as a huge can of worms for all the narrow streets in Twain Heart. The cost and inconvenience for a project of this magnitude is inconceivable. We do not believe that one person should dictate his absurd ideas to the majority of residents on Shady Brook Drive who disagree with his idea. He doesn't even live on this street. We want to keep our neighborhood as peaceful as it always has been for 50 plus years. It is perfect just as it is, and we purchased our cabin because of it. Please do not consider this proposal. Next is a letter, from Otto Giuliani. We access through Pinewood Lane. Dear General Manager Trump, it was brought to my attention by a neighbor that the Twain Heart Recreation District would be discussing the topic of emergency ingress, egress at its board meeting on Wednesday, July 14th, 2021. Further, this discussion might include gaining ingress and egress via Pinewood Lane. Pinewood Lane is a private road, has been a private road, and such has always been restricted to residents, their guests, and persons with lawful business. Everyone who purchased property on this road did so with a complete understanding that Pinewood was a dead-end road and thus residents would not be subjected to traffic and safety issues through a road. Allowing through traffic on Pinewood Lane would diminish the value of every property and drive up the cost of maintenance for each resident. I can tell you that I have personally paid over $26,000 and many hours of sweat and toil maintaining this road since purchasing my first property on Pinewood Lane some 35 years ago. Most recently, four residents of the upper end of Pinewood Lane spent $40,000 for road base, asphalt overlay, just a quarter mile of Pinewood to Middlecamp. The county stopped accepting dedication of private roads many years ago. The decision was based completely on cost. The county cannot afford to maintain the roads currently within its purview. As you know, the county is cutting the budget because it has a deficit. So even if all the residents of Pinewood Lane agreed to provide access, the increased use and associated damage would be the responsibility of residents of Pinewood Lane since the county lacks appropriate funding. As a retired city manager with many years of experience managing the complexities of several cities in the Bay Area, I know that forcibly changing the nature of a private road to public use, even restricted, is not an easy task. Under the law, this would constitute a taking. Tuolumne County is the level of government authorized to condemn property or use eminent domain. Eminent domain refers to the power of the government to take private property and convert it to public use. This amendment provides that the government may only exercise this power if they provide just compensation to the property. Changing the nature of Pinewood by opening it up to public traffic, even on a controlled basis, would be a taking. While the Twain Heart Community Services District is well within its right and authority to have discussions about any topic, recommend actions, and make requests, it lacks the legal authority to force change. Twain Heart Community Services District could make a recommendation to the Tuolumne County Planning Commission for its review and possible action. If the Planning Commission decided it wanted to travel that road, no pun intended, it would have to commence a study and have a minimum of two public hearings. All residents of Pinewood Lane would have to be notified by mail, as well as a substantial number of residents abutting Pinewood Lane. More likely than not, a change in the road use from private to public would require an EIR, environmental impact. Assuming the Planning Commission submitted the proposal to the Board of Supervisors, they alone would have the authority to begin the process of using eminent domain to take control and change the status of our private road. All of this would take time and cost Tuolumne County money that it does not have to spend. Remember, the county is running a deficit and is cutting the budget. That alone would most likely be enough for a judge to rule against the county position. I understand the genesis for this discussion is the result of a resident of Shady Brook Drive seeking emergency ingress egress. Further, putting aside the incursion on the Pinewood Lane, any such action would require ingress egress on property owned by the Plainhart Recreation District. Specifically, property with backup water supply for fighting structure fires in downtown Plainhart. It is clear that the first priority of the Plainhart Recreation District is the protection and integrity of the backup water supply. While unrestricted access to such a sensitive area would be unwise, find the easier to commit when an area is open and routinely traveled. Remember, the priority is integrity of the backup water supply. God forbid, Plainhart would ever experience a catastrophic fire like the one that occurred in the city of Paris. If one did occur, the issue of emergency ingress egress would be a problem for most of Plainhart, not just Shady Brook Drive. Resolving past planning errors is difficult, so we strive to improve the planning of new development. Formal emergency notification and evacuation plans are really important for older communities like 29. Respectfully, Otto Chiquiano.
Okay. Your voice okay?
Oh, okay. I'll be saying it in the church choir. You can leave them, really. Next letter is from John and Tammy Burton. Mr. Trott. Thank you for contacting us regarding the upcoming discussion regarding Shady Brook Drive. We have a number of concerns regarding Mr. Erickson's proposals. Where is this money to come from to fund such endeavors? All these proposals involve private property, which he does not own. By opening up or removing said gates, are we asking for more car traffic visitors to the area, which will create an even greater problem? If the goal would be the ability to evacuate our neighborhood safely in the event of a rapidly approaching fire, maybe we should be addressing the current issue of cars parking into the roadway up on Wildwood Drive, which would surely cause an evacuation issue should that be necessary. Maybe we should consider parking restrictions up there for stronger enforcement of cars impeding the roadway. Is Mr. Erickson's goal to allow for foot traffic to escape a rapidly approaching fire? Would these proposals be realistic to achieve that? If his goal is to allow for quick escape of vehicles, does any of this even make sense? While we do appreciate the board taking into consideration the neighbor's opinions, we feel this neighbor's opinion does not speak for the majority of those who live here. Most importantly, it holds no realistic solution. Thank you, John and Tony Burney. This is from an anonymous Shady Brook Drive resident. Hi, Tom. Thank you for your time on the phone today. Several of my fellow homeowners on Shady Brook have become aware of discussions around creating a fire exit road across Shady Brook Water Retention Pond, as well as the possibility of creating a park-like setting and trail around the pond. Whereas we are all concerned about fire safety, we are very concerned about some of the ideas being put forward. Speaking for myself, as well as several other homeowners on the street, we would like to state that the concerned citizen that's driving this request, while I am sure is well-intentioned, does not speak on our behalf, nor does he necessarily represent the views of the homeowners on Shady Brook. Our specific concerns about this proposal: the levee would not support any vehicle traffic, and the steep egress into heavily wooded private land is not practical for either a vehicular or walking escape in case of fire. The ponds are both backup water supply as well as fire supply, and they're surrounded by private property, which is not compatible with increased recreational use. The street does not have parking or adequate access for any additional recreational traffic. The street is already narrow from Wildwood on down, and additional traffic or vehicles parked on the road would create an increased fire hazard. Increased recreational use would ultimately lead to additional liability and increased fencing, as happened on the ditch fencing area off South Fork Road, as well as incur additional trash and safety concerns for this residential street. If a fire is truly a concern, keeping the Wildwood and Shady Brook street access clear of vehicles would be a priority, or perhaps a more direct fire road back to Wildwood or to the Chapel and the Pines parking lot would be simpler, a simpler solution, but of course, these two would impact private property. The neighbors on Shady Brook would be sure to stay in touch and will be happy to attend any open board meetings or discussions around the front topic. These local residents, is that part of the same thing?
No.
Okay. Okay. These local residents asked that only an excerpt from the comment email be included in the board packet. This is from Mike and Brenda Griffin on Pinewood Lane. Good afternoon, Tom. Thanks for your email, and yes, you can include the excerpt from our email in the packet, which will be reviewed by the board. Our preference would be that Pinewood Lane remain a private road. Although another means of egress in an emergency sounds good, we don't think its value outweighs the increased traffic and wear and tear on the road. Wear and tear on the road, a through road would bring with them. We don't think that its value outweighs the increased traffic and wear and tear on the road that a through road would bring. Okay, and I believe this is the last one. From John and Tammy Burton, Mr. Trott and THCSD Board of Directors. It came to our attention today that Bruce Erickson of Wildwood Drive proposed some type of public use access to Shady Brook Pond. We have been residents of Shady Brook Drive since January 2006. Interestingly, Mr. Erickson has not mentioned this proposal to us, his neighbors. He would not be affected as by the increased traffic, parking issues, the potential increase of wildfire risk created by such public access, but we certainly would. Through the years, we have found ourselves impacted by visitors to Shady Brook Pond. We have had to ask people if they would move their vehicles so we can gain access to our driveway. We have picked up trash after people, including burning cigarettes. We have even had people walk up our driveway and continue their picnic on our property. We have had our landscaping damaged by people removing the decorative rocks that maintain the integrity of the hillside in front of the cabin and thrown into the pond. Above all else, as anyone who lives on these beautiful mountains is fully aware of, the need for smart planning when it comes to wildfire safety Shady Brook Drive is a narrow road with one entrance and exit. When cars are parked on the shoulder, it can be difficult to get another car past, much less an emergency vehicle. We find it ironic that such a proposal would be made from someone who has taken it upon himself to cut the THCSD gate lock under the premise of an escape route, and yet would propose the idea of allowing more cars to populate the area. This is also the same man who has parked his large vehicle in the way of the access point for PG&E to install improved poles to make our neighborhood safer. Considering this as the owner of the, quote, neighborhood clock, one would think that he would include his neighbors in a proposal that would have a much greater impact on those of us living in Shady Brook Drive. We hope you will strongly consider the increased risks of taxpaying homeowners on the street most greatly affected by this framework proposal. Thank you, John and Tammy Burton. Okay.
May I address the issue?
Of course.
Unless anybody else would like to talk at this time. Well, let's check online.
Can you move back up to the
So I personally took Mr. Erickson down to the pond and talked to him and pointed out that none of his ideas were feasible. We have met several times to discuss that we aren't the agency. If he wanted to pursue this, that we aren't the agency, that I personally would vote against and not recommend that we do any of his proposals. I would like to point out I'm the only board member that lives on a through road. Everybody else lives on cul-de-sacs. It's a common, there's over 20 cul-de-sacs in Twainhart. I stopped counting at 27. It's a common problem. Most of the streets are very narrow. His concern about fire trucks turning around is ridiculous. Since we put in a draft point at the pond just for fire, our fire department practices down there. It has better access than most of the streets. I pointed out that if he was truly concerned about fire, his daughter and son-in-law, who live across the street from him, to put in steps, like I believe Ms. Cowell did, so that they could have access very close to Walking Gully. But that the best thing to do in case of any fire is to leave Earth. That is your best, and leave by the ropes. Part of the frustration is that we had to have this meeting was because he did not believe us that he was in the minority in his opinions on his plan. And that's all I'm saying.
Thank you. Anyone else? Just a personal comment, in the interest of full disclosure, Bruce Erickson has been one of my best friends for years. He and I have locked horns over this in ways that has seriously damaged that friendship, which frankly breaks my heart. But I think this proposal, or these proposals that seem to have morphed from time to time, I think they're totally unplausible, if that's the word. I think it's just a terrible idea. They're just terrible ideas. And I'm grateful for all of you here and all the people who wrote letters. I'm glad to get your opinions so that we have a sense of what the community truly believes. Because it has been presented to me that the entire neighborhood is in agreement with his proposals. And that's not true. So that's all I have to say.
Do you have a comment?
I'd like to make a comment, too.
Hold on, Rich. Hold on. A comment from the public.
Carol, you had your hand raised.
Hi, do you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, just a quick comment, and that is, this might be a great opportunity for people to get together and do a FireWise neighborhood so that you can address some of the issues that you're talking about in terms of shaded fuel break and clearing road access. Also, in terms of parking along the street, as a community, I think the homeowners should go to the county and talk about, possibly restricting that for fire access, et cetera. So those are just kind of some of the things that I see as, kind of as sitting aside away from this a little bit. I think doing cleanup is so important. And I agree that there needs to be a way for people to get in and out when there's an emergency, but not necessarily opening up roads that were, were set as closed roads in the past. So just my ideas there.
Thank you, Carol. Rich, you had a comment?
Well, the way I look at it, we're not responsible for the roads or anything else. I know the pond is, we rent that from Julie and the other little pond we own. But for us to dictate that we can cut roads into other private people's property or put a park there when we have to keep it fenced and secure, so I just can't see why we would even be involved in it. Give it to the county. The county should take care of it, not us.
Thank you. Anyone else in the public? Charlotte, any thoughts, comments, Kevin? Okay. Well, the agenda item calls for discussion and action regarding emergency ingress or egress. That means we can take action or we can take no action. So what's the pleasure of the board?
I would propose that we make a motion to go on record as opposing these plans.
You want to make that motion?
Yes, I would. I would second that.
Do we need to do a roll call as we're zooming? Okay.
Yes. We'll do a roll call. Director Manning?
Yes.
Director DeGroote?
Yes.
Director Bowman?
Yes.
Director Nathan?
Yes.
And Director Shipley?
Yes. Okay, thank you. Don't leave. The fun has just begun.
But you may keep it late.
Okay, next item is discussion or action regarding the
Bocce Club. Thank you for coming.
The Bocce Club dedication and ribbon cutting event. Thank you, folks.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. Who needs to take this? Katherine, you were the ad hoc committee member.
Yeah,
but
we have an email from them.
Our ad hoc planning committee met last Wednesday. It's made up of Eileen and Catherine and John Kim's father, Nancy Sorensen, and Mick Grimes. So we had a good representation there with a lot of good ideas. We have tentatively planned. It's more than tentatively. It's still based on the plaque arriving in time, which we think it will. We've given ourselves a little bit of leeway, but all vendors are claiming COVID as a breakout. So what is planned is August 11th, which is Wednesday, at 6:30 p.m. in the evening. And what we're planning is to have a short ceremony, do three things. It would, one, honor Jim and dedicate Jim Johnson and dedicate the Bocce Course. We would thank everyone who are involved, and there's a long list of volunteers and donors that helped make that happen. And then would promote the new park, essentially showing that what we have done is a little bit of a forerunner of what's to come. And so we're thinking a very short ceremony. It could be 10 to 15 minutes. There will be cake and water is available afterwards, and then the invitation to stick around and play bocce or do whatever you would like to do, hang out. And that's essentially it. I think that would be a nice way. We're going to be inviting everybody that we can possibly invite, especially those who are involved, all of our customers, everybody who's interested in the park, the press, Snorri Area Foundation, anyone else you would like me to add?
You know me and been fighting the press. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Did I miss anything?
No. Anything
else? That's great. We just hope the community will come out and support it and see where we're taking it in our next step with the big park.
Yeah. I was down at the bocce court last weekend and got my butt kicked in pretty much.
It is certainly a well used facility.
The whole park idea is just starting to work really good. I had a conversation at the concert Saturday night with John King's father and Jeff Sorensen. They say that the homeowners are going to take the stage area, and then I don't think this year, but next year and the year after, the two bathrooms to match the color scheme of the park, so they'll all be tied together and in a kind of unified way. I'm just powdered not get out of it, like the way this thing's coming together. Do we need to take any action on that? I don't think we do. Yeah,
usually the action is there just in case you would like to take an action.
Right.
There's no recommendation. It's more of an update unless you're opposed to any of the plans.
Yeah. Anybody opposed to this idea? Anybody out there want to fight this? Okay. Thank you. Next is discussion or action to adopt Resolution 2124, appreciation for Bill McManus. So this is something this year.
I believe he's online.
He is online. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, Bill.
Okay. Do you want me to read it since it's my reading day?
Yes.
Whereas the Tonehawk Community Services District recognizing the dedication and sacrifice required in performing the duties of a board director, and whereas Mr. Bill McManus wholeheartedly served as a director on the district board from July 2015 to July 2021, working diligently to bring excellence and continual improvement to the district, and whereas Mr. McManus demonstrated a continual dedication to improving the quality of life in the Twin Heart community throughout his 6 years of service, and whereas Mr. McManus was always willing to volunteer when a need arose, whether it was for the district, Plainhart community, Plainhart area community emergency response team, CERT, or Plainhart homeowners. And whereas Mr. McManus's experience and background provided a high level of professionalism and expertise to the district, especially in the areas of contracts and implementation of capital projects. And whereas Mr. McManus's service made Plainhart a better place and is worthy of commendation, now therefore be it resolved that the Plainhart Community Services District Board of Directors, on behalf of the district and its customers, sincerely thank and honor Bill McManus for his years of service to this district and community. Bill, we love you. Well, I guess nobody wants to make a motion on this.
I'll make a motion that we honor Bill in this way.
Motion
from Director DeGroote and a second from Director
Bowman.
So I'll do a roll call.
Director Mannix?
Yes.
Director Nixon?
Yes.
Director DeGroote?
Yes.
Director Cipriani?
Yes.
Director
Bowman?
Yes.
The controversy continues. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you. And I just wanted to put my two cents in and say that it's been wonderful knowing Bill and Francis McManus, but seeing Bill on the board for CSD has been really wonderful for our community, as it is with all of you on the board. So appreciation not just to Bill, but to all of you.
And I'd like to dovetail on that to thank both Bill and Francis and you, Carol, and your SERP team. When I got my two shots down at the church, you folks were just outstanding. I can't tell you how much I appreciated the way you folks went. I really appreciate it. Okay, next on the agenda, presentation of the strategic plan progress report for fiscal year 2021. Mr. Trott.
Yes, sir. Would you like me to go through this entire thing? This is something we do every year. I'll say some of the highlights, if that's okay. If you have more questions, you can. But we, for those of you who don't know, we have a strategic plan that covers about 5 years out. The board gets together and determines a vision for the next 5 years, and then we all come together as board and staff and create actual action items and goals and objectives to reach that vision. So every year what we do is we come back and we look at how we've done. We create a progress report of how we've achieved some of these goals. So I'll state a few of the things, some of the highlights that we've accomplished in this past fiscal year. I'm not going to go through all of them unless you would like to. We've made significant steps, especially in for the sewer system, of really assessing the condition of our sewer system, which is very difficult considering the vast majority of it is underground. So we've done CCTV, or we videoed most of those lines. We've assessed a lot of it. We've looked at hydraulic models, which look at the capacity of those lines. And we've come up with some prioritized ways that we can best address our sewer system. So that's a major undertaking. That was all grant funded. And then from the water side, we also started that with a hydraulic model. But we have received a $499,053 or something like that.
Just $500,000
grant to begin that project as well. And so both of these together are incredible, because not only do they provide an assessment of our entire system, which, like I mentioned, very difficult to assess because it's underground, it presents a path forward of how we best get to the place. We obviously can't replace everything at the same time, even though it's old. So we're looking at replacing the most significant things that may have the most impact first. So those are big things. Well, 3 went online this last year. That's the third of 3 wells, and you'll hear from my drought presentation later that that's a really significant thing, especially as we enter into drought. We have installed generators at well 1, well 3. And then we replaced the fire station generator, which was going out. so that we're more reliable. There are PSPS and other things. And we also obtained a grant to do one at the community center and one at our SCBA fill station.
Tom?
Yeah.
True. We don't know if the CBA.
SCBA is a breathing apparatus. That's all I remember.
Self-contained breathing.
It's the air bottles that the firefighters use to be able to breathe when they go into a burning building.
Like to be sort of.
Thank you.
You know.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, Charlotte, this is her first real full meeting. We thank you and congratulate you.
Yes.
Carry on. I'm sorry.
We developed a plan to install AEDs, that those are automatic external defibrillators.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, yep, there's one right behind you.
This
is, it's kind of like being able to save somebody for dummies. Gives you the ability to do that without having all of the training. All the training is helpful. And Chief Gomez has come up with an excellent plan to be able to put these throughout the community in businesses of importance and be able to train their employees to be able to administer them so that they can get these on while we're on the way in our really quick 3-minute response time. But every second counts, especially when it comes to a heart attack. And so we've identified a plan for that. We've applied for funding and we're hoping to get funding to be able to do that. We gained really big funding for the park and for a lot of Twain Art actually. For the stormwater grant, that was a $3.475 million grant. I think that's right. 2.75, anyway.
A little dyslexia.
Yeah, I might have gotten that mixed up, but it's a large grant, I should say that. And so that's a major win for the park because it will fund about 60% of the new park. It fund all of our parking lot improvements out here. It will replace the storm drain throughout town, put sidewalks on Joaquin Gully, and also put a tank in at the school to capture storm water and water that whole field. So, you know, when you're talking about drought and water supply, and, you know, there might be no potential of enlarging your mine's dam or anything like that, but when you start capturing storm water, those are creative ways of improving our water supply reliability. Social media and building outreach is an all-time high. Thanks to Kim. And you know, a lot of our Facebook posts now reach thousands of people, even more than our population base, which is excellent. And so we've really upped the game on that. And then I think another big highlight is this past year is we restructured the operations division. And that allowed us to add one employee and actually not really at any cost. I think there's a very minimal added cost, but we added an employee and got an excellent operations manager. So very high, good improvement in that level. Those are my...
And we have pretty reports. Because
that's right.
We had the prettiest report.
Thank you, Louis. Up with your game.
Thanks for coming to the game, Louis.
I almost took pictures of Mel on the phone and Kim typing, but they just didn't seem to compare.
She looks really good, Louis.
Those are the main highlights I wanted to hit. If you have any other questions, there's a lot more things there that we've done. And as you know, there are a lot of other things that we've done that are not within our strategic plan goals and objectives that are highly important to the services we provide.
The only thing I would suggest is that we have some printouts of this and available as front information.
Of the strategic plan with the progress reports?
Absolutely. Good idea.
For any customers that would like to.
Good idea. Anyway, I think one of the operative things that is important to me is that unlike most organizations that I've ever part of, seen in operation, we have a strategic plan that we actually look at and we use it. And the strategic plan essentially drives what we do. And I'm very proud of it. I just remembered the other thing that I wanted to say. I did the math on here. It's on a copy that I saved, but that went away when the agenda got updated. But in the past year, we've gained close to $5 million in grants. I think it's $4 million and change.
In the past year,
right? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, for a community the size of Twain Heart that got $5 million in grants, arguably one of the best fire departments for a community our size in the country, I'm kind of proud of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Anyway, I have no questions. Anybody else have a question or thoughts on
I have one comment. Having been part of school systems for many, many years, it's really hard to write definitive goals and objectives. And so when I read through this, it's really good to see that these are all very measurable. We either do it or didn't do it, or you did it to a certain degree. It's not fuzzy. And I think the public would like to see that, so I mean that's a very good comment.
And
what specifically are we working on, and what are we succeeding at so far?
You'll notice that some of them that we've made significant progress on, they're not checked off as complete. Some of that is because I view some of them as ongoing as well.
Yeah.
It's not just a one-time
right.
thing. It's something that we're establishing as culture.
Right.
And now.
Right. Good point. Any other questions, thoughts? Okay. Then we move on to discussion or action to approve the general manager's objectives for fiscal year 21-22. Once again, Mr. Trott.
Like the comment you just made, my objectives every year are based specifically on the strategic plan. So when you see SP 1.2, that means that's the strategic plan objective 1.2. And so this is, again, we use the strategic plan as our guide over these 5 years to reach our vision, which furthers our mission. And so when you look at these, that's what you'll find is what I believe are the staff as the next best steps towards accomplishing those objectives. And I can go through this in detail if you would like, or I can kind of just give you some broad overview. This doesn't encompass all the things that we do every year. And you'll know that when you do my evaluation, I have like a 2-page sheet on the end of all the other things that came up, like COVID or you know, all the other stuff that we have to deal with.
That was not an objective.
No, there's always things that are not planned or anticipated, but that our staff does an incredible job of flexing and moving. So I'll just say some of the big things that we're focused on. Finishing off the sewer system assessment is going to be high on the list. That's almost done. That should be done in the next couple months. Initiating the water system assessment, which is going to be likely a 2-year project, is my guess. Is another big thing that we're going to be focusing on, and especially some of the things that we've already started in regards to making system improvements so that we can eliminate the Laurel pump station and the Cedar Pines tank to provide operational efficiencies, but also make it a lot more inexpensive. We're going to be really looking at designing the full SCADA system this year. I know that was on the docket last year, but it's one of the things that got pushed for a couple of reasons, but that's our goal this year, is to have it completely designed and in place and out the bid and ready to rock. It's called Supervisory Control and Data Acquisition System. Essentially what it is your remote control and observation of the whole water system and the sewer system. And the sewer system currently doesn't have that ability. It gives our operators the ability to see visually what is going on in the system. Is this pump on? How much is it pumping? Are the pressures okay in this area? What are our chlorine levels? Anything we have the ability to measure or see, you'd be able to see that, and not just from the water plant, but from your home. Or anywhere. Actually, it has to. And as long as you have a good password. That's right. You can see also when we're ramped up on water and sewer system maintenance. So our goal is to do a quarter of the system. That is sewer line cleaning, that's inspection of manholes, that's turning and exercising water valves, And then also, if drought conditions allow, I put that in there because they don't allow right now to be testing fire hydrants. So we want to make sure that we're continually testing fire hydrants, making sure that the pressures are good and the flows are good. But when you do that, it takes a lot of water. And it's, there's nothing like in a drought, you're having a ton of water flowing down the street. As far as emergency preparedness goes, we're going to be putting those two generators at the facility, as I mentioned earlier, with the grant that we have. We'll be conducting some more cybersecurity evaluation that's directly in connection with the SCADA system as we do that. We're going to be really, and Chief is already doing this, hitting hard some of the vacant lot compliance, and then really working with the community to do their part as well, as far as sensible space goes, and developing, as Carol mentioned, FireWise communities, those kinds of things, and providing a lot of good education. Chief has applied for a grant to improve our emergency alert warning system even more. So as of right now, some of the parts are not available anymore for the old one. So this one would be one that also works with all the other stations that are trying to do it in the entire county. It could be something that's put into place all at the same time or activated all at the same time. We're going to be looking at some of our potential high-risk emergency incidents that could potentially affect, hopefully won't, but could affect our district, and coming up, starting to develop plans to address those with other agencies and those kinds of things. We're hoping to be able to put in place our AED program that I talked about, as long as we get funding on that. We're going to be looking, there will probably be a lot of discussion this year now that the Measure B did not pass, which is the tax for fire. There will probably be a lot of discussion about fire services in the county. You know, we intend to be fully engaged in those. Always looking for a continual improvement, not only of our own district, but of what we can do to make the surrounding fire service better in our whole region. Because as you know, and for fire services, you know, we're responding to them and they're responding for us too when we have big events. We need to make sure that one, we're on the same page, but two, that we're congruent in our training and all those kinds of things. Looking to get the rest of the funding for the park. So it's one of those things, like, you know, when Tom Brady wins the Super Bowl and he celebrates for one day, and the next day he's like, everybody get back to work because we're going to win it again. Well, we have more to win. We're going to start that. My hope is that the design will be complete by the end of the fiscal year for the park, and that we will have the remaining funding in place.
Make it sad you're younger than Tom Brady.
I've got some Super Bowls to win. We have some plans to step up park engagement and make it easier to understand what people are looking for and what they think on a more readily available basis. We have some plans to also up some of our community engagement, which involves videos on Facebook. Facebook has been incredibly successful as far as getting the word out. We're going to be working with the elementary school a little bit, if we can, or trying to. And then implementing paperless billing over the next few months, but also using that as a campaign to get email addresses from all of our customers so that we have another way of being able to communicate effectively. This is not in the strategic plan, but labor negotiations is coming up for all of our operations and admin staff. So we were looking, as always, to negotiate sustainable, but also mutually beneficial contract. Because as you know, our employees are very important to us, their backbone. And I know that some people just say because things are supposed to say. But I truly believe that our board and our management applies by that. We're going to be looking at our customer service rep. I'm not going to cry. I was a year and a half away. But our customer service rep is going to be retiring soon.
No.
And so it's really important, even though it's a year and a half away, to begin getting that plan in place, because she is incredible, and we need to make sure that we find somebody who can kind of at least sort of fill those shoes. and knows how to do that. So we'll be working on that over this the course of this next bit of time as we transition to some remote work on my behalf. We'll be looking always at putting in structures and flexing and methods to improve our management depth, improve our functionality or communications, all those kinds of things. So I'm actually going to be looking to you as well to be involved in that conversation as we learn and grow together. We're going to be officially implementing a district-wide wellness program. We told you about
so
it.
The test worked.
The test worked. We learned some good things, and now we're going to continue learning as we do. A lot of things we do is experimental, but good. We just look to keep improving them. And the central filing system, the huge 500-pound weight that nobody has ever wanted to lift is going to be lifted. And as you know, Kim's done a good job of starting some of that. We got a records retention in place. We're going to not only just have that on paper now, we're going to implement it and get rid of a lot of things that are allowed to be gotten rid of, duplicates, those kinds of things, and then also now begin to organize it in a way that can be used easily and accessed. We're going to be looking at continuing reviewing of some of our policies and our ordinances, and then also this year we're going to initiate our water and sewer rate study, as we discussed during the week. Any questions on that? Anything you feel is missing?
I had a question about SCADA because we've had it on the agenda on the objectives for the this is the third year.
Second year. But it was for last year.
Yeah. So you answered those questions, so thank you. I have none. The only thing I would like to say is that both based on the objectives for this coming year and the accomplishments for last year, we have a pretty a big list of stuff that we have to get done. I was going to think of some fancy way of saying it, but we do a lot of stuff.
Ambitious.
We are always aggressive.
Yep.
And that, it's the, if you shoot for the stars, at least you'll hit the clouds.
Yeah, well, if there were clouds, it'd be raining. I think the objectives for the next year are both ambitious and in many cases doable. And we have to approve this. Would anybody like to make a motion or any other comments about this? Do you have a comment that you wanted to make?
Not at this time.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, then I need a motion.
I'll move that we approve the subject. Second.
Okay, I have a motion for Director Mannix and a second for Director Bowman. I'll do a roll call. Director Newsom?
Yes.
Director Sipperly?
Yes.
Director DeGroote?
Yes.
Director Bowman?
Yes.
And Director Mannix?
Yes.
And put those boxing gloves away. Okay. Get to work. discussion or action to cast a vote. The Open California Special District Association, CSDA, Board of Directors, C. Tom, you want to explain a little bit about what CSDA is?
California Special District Association is what it is. It's an association of special districts, which we are one of. Can't remember how many there are in California, but there are quite a few. I think it's 4,000, or that's the number that comes to my head. Made up of all different kinds of districts that serve the community at the most local level that you can get as far as government goes. And CSDA is an incredibly valuable association for us. They provide all kinds of training. They lobby on behalf of special districts. They make sure that we're aware of all kinds of updates to the law, which happen all the time and require a full-time position just to keep track of. And so we lean on them incredibly. They give us, trying to think of the word, it's a representative basically that is for our specific area and deals with the special districts within our specific area and lobbies on our behalf as well. So they've been incredibly valuable. And so this is on the agenda here because they have an open seat for our area and are looking for a vote for who to fill that seat. I'll just say what you can see there. Noel Maddock is the incumbent and has done a great job. I'm not trying to sway, I'm just telling you.
Well, if you didn't, I would. Any other, anybody have any thoughts about candidates that would like to cast a single vote for?
I think because our current rep has done such a good job, we shouldn't mess with unknowns.
Okay, would you like to make that the formal motion?
I move that we cast our vote or for snow on that.
I'll second that. Okay. I have a motion from Director Mannix and a second from Director DeGroote. I'll do a roll call. Director Newsom?
Yes.
Director Sipperly?
Yes.
Director Bowman?
Yes.
Director DeGroote?
Yes.
And Director Mannix?
Yes.
Thank you. The last fun item before we get to reports is how dry I am. I'm dry.
Okay. Just going to give you a little bit of an update here. I hope never to see this map again or all things like that.
That's the truth.
But that's just where we're at. Welcome to California. So drought again, yes. Absolutely, yes, it is drought. You can see that dark red, the dark, or whatever you call that, maroon, represents exceptional drought. That's 33% of the state right now is considered exceptional. That's the highest rating that you can get from NOAA. All the bright red, which seems considerably better, is extreme drought, and that represents 52% of the state. And then you can see the orange is severe drought, which is 9% of the state. And then the rest of the state is that kind of tan color, which is, you know, just moderate. I think that's only like 6%. But the reality is 94% of California is in severe or worse drought. When you look at the next slide, you can see that our precipitation is well below normal. Average precipitation over the last, I'm doing my math in my head, 50 years, or so is about 40 inches in our area, in our region, and this year we're 18.3. So that's less than half. You'll notice that in this presentation, I don't do any weather reports as far as precipitation because we are through our weather, unless we get some kind of miraculous July rainfall, which normally doesn't happen. In fact, it's quite normal to not have any rainfall except for maybe a tiny thunderstorm in July or August.
Which comes with lightning.
Which comes with lightning, that's right.
Yeah.
And so you can see, I gave you this for reference, that light shaded blue area is average. Those other four lines you see are the four years of drought that we experienced from 2012 through 2015. And you can see this one is right on par with the worst. Some of the significance of the last drought is that there were 4 years in a row. This is our second year in a row. So we don't have 4 years in a row, but we're seeing things that we haven't seen, that the professionals, experts haven't seen ever. I think usually they can take the snowpack, which supplies about 40% of California's water, and they can say, this is how much water is in it, and this is how much is going to come down into the reservoirs. They did that this year, except that water evaporated or sunk into the ground or vanished. And it did not go down into the reservoir. So they're not seeing the flows in the rivers or filling up the reservoirs like normal. And just to give you an idea of precipitation, and this is why California is such a dry or wet back and forth kind of climate. We, when they do the predictions for whether it's going to be a wet year or a dry year, it's basically for half of all. The other half of our water comes through what they call atmospheric rivers or Pineapple Express or whatever you want to call it. Those come out from Hawaii and they come in. Those are those storms that drop like 4 to 5 inches all in one shot. Those are unpredictable. Those are random. Normally we get 5 to 7 of those a year. Last year we got 0, not one. And that's why you see us at about half. So we actually got half of our precipitation, which was the normal amount of precipitation, but the other half that we depend on to get to normal is unpredictable, and it can be extremely high. I think in 2017, when we had all that water, we were in like 15 or something like that, atmospheric rivers.
and this one we're at zero. Normally we need 5 to 7 to get us filled in. Next slide, please. This is a picture of the major reservoirs in California and where they are at. Just for reference, none of these are where we get our water. We do have water from our watershed that goes into these reservoirs. But the reason we show this is because this is what the state uses to make a lot of their requirements. And so you can see all of these, those red lines are normal. The red line that goes across, just about every single reservoir is way below what is normal. An important thing to bring up, let's take Lake Oroville, for example. It's 30% capacity right now. That doesn't mean that you can use all of that water. Every reservoir has what they call a dead pool, which is the amount of water that they can no longer take out of anymore. And so it might be that only half of that water is actually available for consumptive use. And this is the reason why you recently heard that the governor has 15% voluntary conservation. It's when he looks at this and he goes, oh, wow, we don't have any more snowpack. We need to start doing some voluntary conservation. But in that, you should know, too, that even in the same statement where he's calling for voluntary conservation, he's also recognizing that all of California is using significantly less than they did in 2014 in the last drought, because there have been permanent changes made to the way that people use water, to the efficiencies of the facilities that they use to use water, and all of those have continued to make a difference. Okay, looking at our water supply, Lyons Reservoir is about 77% full, and then Pinecrest is about 95% full. According to UD, Lyons, you know, that's a little bit lower than it is normal. We had it earlier in the spill. Lyons Reservoir is projected to drop much quicker than it has in the past, and even potentially get down to levels where the water quality starts to be affected. So I don't know if you remember this kind of conversation from last time. When you start to get down below 1,500 acre feet, it starts to get a little fishy, so to speak, or more pond-like, and creates some taste and odor issues. Not safety issues, just smells a little bit off. And those are the kinds of things that we may experience in August because of the year that we're in.
You saw the article in the paper about Sonora.
Yes.
Yeah.
From the algal blooms.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And so that's similar. And you may have experienced this too. You know, when we have a ditch outage and we convert over to Shady Brook water, that water, it tastes a little different than our normal water that's coming off the ditch. So that could be something that we experience in the summer. Pinecrest Lake is 95% full. It's projected, just so you know, it is regulated by the Federal Energy Regulation Commission for recreation. And it's supposed to stay above a certain elevation until Labor Day. So we can't really access that water until after that point. The elevation that is supposed to stay above is 5,608. They're supposed to target 5,610. And that's what PG&E, who owns and operates that reservoir, tries to do all the way through Labor Day. Fortunately, last year we had an exception passed where in certain dry years, they can draw it down a little bit lower. Right now, they're expecting it to go down to 5,607 by Labor Day.
It's based on the end of spill, is it not?
Correct. It is based on the end of spill, which is the end of spill is the time period where the water coming into the reservoir is not sufficient enough to keep up with evaporation, and it stops spilling over the reservoir, over the dam. So fortunately we have that in place. TUD is not necessarily concerned about having enough water. There's the ability to take from that now, which is helpful. However, there is a shortage, nevertheless. And so they just met yesterday. They did not call for voluntary or mandatory conservation, but using very similar messaging to the messaging we're using about using water wisely, ramping up education to make sure people know how to irrigate effectively and efficiently, and how to use it efficiently. And so we're doing a lot of those same things. We put out a bill insert. We're going to continue to do that. Kim has implemented water-wise Wednesdays tips on Facebook to continue just to hit those. We have signs purchased that will go up at every part of where you can enter into our district. It says use water wisely if we drop counts.
We're going to use the signs that we had 3 or 4 years ago?
No, we have new signs that will go up. If it gets bad, we might take the next step into some of those. But this is just a reminder that it's in people's faces all the time. And also to educate some of our new customers, because we have quite a few new customers, a lot of sales, home sales in our district. And what we're actually experiencing over the last, what is it, 2013, over the last 7 to 8 years, we've been consistently 25 to 35% lower water use than in 2013. Over this past year, with people moving up here more full-time, we're more like 5%. So we've seen an increase in demand, not necessarily because people are using it less efficiently all of a sudden, but because we have more people using it. And so it's important that we educate them and work. Next one, please. So I did not include precipitation forecast, because that's basically not, even if it was above normal, it could be half an inch. But I did include temperature, and you can see that we're looking at 50% probability of higher than normal temperatures. That doesn't mean it's going to be 50% higher. That just means that the probability of higher than normal temperatures exists. It could be half a degree higher than normal. It could be 1 degree. It could be 15 degrees. But as we've seen in the last couple of weeks, it's hot and dry. And this is not only a concern for drought, it's also a concern for fire.
I think that's conservative, 50%.
I agree.
Yes, very well could be. So do we need to ask for the conservation? I think right now what we're doing is effective. We're putting up signs, we're educating. We're going to be going to some of the customers, anybody who has a leak quickly, but then maybe also visiting some of our customers or informing them who may be our high water users.
Anybody to know?
About their water use and giving them some tips. Lots of dramatic. I will say that we are in a lot different circumstances, just as a reminder, than we were last time we hit this drought, because we have 3 groundwater wells, which supplement our supply.
All of which are producing well.
All of them are producing well. The levels in them are normal. There have been some instances around the county where some wells are starting to go dry again. We are not seeing that with our wells. Any questions on that?
Where are the car maintenance?
They should be on the vehicles, are they? Yes.
Oh, these are magnet things that you guys have on your car. Not magnets we can buy, but on our car.
We have actually one if you want.
Does it say use water wisely?
Does use water wisely?
I think you should use water wisely.
One thing one comment I have is it would be nice if, and I'm not saying that staff needs to do this, maybe board could come up with a plan, but reach out more. Last time in the drought, we reached out to schools a lot more, and we had those
The buckets.
So yeah, they needed water,
yeah,
water collection things. I know this isn't the time of year, but we could set it up for fall. And maybe field trips to the new water team at the park and plants.
Yes.
Awareness of the kids. Julie.
Julie?
Yes. When I had
Julie, can you come up here, please? Thank you.
When I had to have, when Cal Fire came through last time and I had to have another 10 trees taken down on one side, they told the guy, the environmental guard, he told me to put the wattles around trees. They would start it now, but I was supposed to start earlier, around the trees, so that we catch water so the trees don't die. So that's another thing that we might want to talk to people.
Those are some of the things, too, that at the new park we'll have some of that where...
To do on street.
Yeah, yeah. And it'll be just actually not a wall, but kind of like a mounding. So the water comes in, yeah.
So just little things that we could do, you know, like, you know, most of our properties should just need a couple of them, but they need to, yeah.
Great idea, predicated on the fact of some water.
Yeah, but you have a plan, because Bob and I originally did stuff. The things that don't reduce paper, and then mounding it up with that, because that's the same.
Yeah,
Waddles.
Like straw
waddles.
So those rolls that are maybe about 4 inches in diameter and they're long.
Six.
Yeah. And you put them around the catch them.
And you might talk to the one company that I haven't sailed.
Question. How far or feasible would it be to make, you know, the little chain mark stickers that you people bought? I mean, is there something that we could come up with that maybe keeps this full sticker that goes, you know, says has that in the background, but then conserve water?
They're buying this. Probably can't sell them, but maybe give them away if they have money. Yeah. Educational awareness.
We should bring them again to that, sir.
We will. Yes, we will.
Thank you.
Good idea.
Yeah.
Even maybe a contest.
Yes.
With the classes could.
Yes.
Which class could serve the most, things like that. Because schools, I just know from volunteering at Bellevue, especially with the kindergarten, when they wash their hands a lot in the class, it's free, but they leave the water running while the kids come and... It takes time for like 30 kids to wash their hands, and it's running the whole time.
The kids are always into these conferences.
Yeah. So it could help in the bigger buildings in the area, not just the residents.
Yeah. To educate the children, they'll go home and they'll say, wow, don't run that far. That's not good.
Well, I don't need a little water. That's
exactly. Well, Mom, you don't have to flush the toilet every time. Yeah. And it's yellow over there.
No. Anyway. All things to look into that just furthers the education without being restrictive or trying to avoid mandatory.
Yeah.
So we might have to move to that.
We'll
be looking at it next month, too.
Do everything we can so we don't have to go to mandatory restrictions.
Yeah. We
have a comment from the public.
So the wattles are kind of expensive. To put around trees, but what about, you know, the chips? We have a lot of companies coming in and chipping trees and debris and that kind of thing. And I know in the past we were able to get some of those chips pretty well, I mean, pretty easily, and now they've got to be around quite a number of them anyway. But that might be a good project too, to work on getting chips for around trees, and it does the same thing. It's a mulch that holds the water.
Yeah.
And that's great because that's also a good education point. My husband bought a chipper just for that, so that we can chip around our trees.
Good idea. Thank you, John. Anything else, sir?
No.
Okay. Then we will go to reports. Does any other board member have a report? I've got a couple of things. Anybody else? Okay. The first thing that I have is that Tom and I attended the June 16th IRWM JPA meeting. I'm going to explain a little bit. Largely for Charlotte's benefit, but for Julie, if she's interested, or anybody else who's listening. The IRWM JPA, the Duwamish-Stanislaus Integrated Regional Water Management Authority, Joint Powers Authority. And I'll get to what that is in just a second. What this meeting was primarily, as far as my perspective goes, we had a presentation from an outfit called Watershed Progressive, which is a consulting and design collaborative focused on bringing appropriate water management to our clients through a regenerative water systems approach. And their presentation was on SPIT. If you're going to do water, then the program called SPIT is perfect. Which stands for Stormwater Project Identification Tool. And the thrust of that presentation was largely, we need to change the paradigm of stormwater. It's not bad, it's good. We need to say it, which coincidentally fits in very neatly with the grant we just got. So, the only thing that you dialed at me that I didn't come, I wasted most of the whole thing. Okay, well, let me just talk about the IRW in just a minute, for a minute, and show this is I'm not sure how you've agreed on this. The IRWM is to provide a framework to improve the collective understanding, to take high priority actions, to collaboratively collaboratively address many major water-related challenges or needs and conflicts within the region throughout the planning horizon. It consists of about 2,700 square miles spanning the western slope of the Sierra Nevada, rising from the lower Sierra foothills to the crest of the Sierras, and includes the Upper Tuolumne River, Upper Stanislaus River, Upper Rock Creek, French Camp, Slough watersheds. And it consists of all of Tuolumne County, the southern portion of Calaveras County, southwestern Alpine. The membership in the IRWM is basically required if you want to get money from the state, which is one reason, one large reason that we are a member of it. All the governmental organizations involved in it have to pay dues to belong to it, which we do, but where do we get our money back? It's organized through a Joint Powers Authority, JPA. There's a paid staff that provides administrative, financial management, facilitation, and process management. In my opinion, they do just a wonderful job. There's a six-member board of directors, all of whom I believe we'll all have to be elected, but backups. Tom is my backup, so when I'm not there, he can be there. It's informed by recommendations from the WAC. So we got six, and we got WAC. It stands for the Watershed Advisory Committee. It consists of representatives from over 20 organizations or agencies and members of the public. The issues that the IRWM addresses include improving efficient use and distribution of water, increasing hydropower generation, developing more reliable and affordable water supplies, meeting water quality needs to include addressing aging septic systems, increasing coordination between land use planning entities and water agencies, practicing resource stewardship and providing for ecosystem needs to improve forest management, improving stormwater capacity and flood management, and accounting for the climate change and planning for future needs. If you'd like that, we're looking for it.
There's also other groups, mountain counties, and other things, but we could, at another time,
right,
go into all the things.
Right, but since I have my obligatory, I showed up to stay away for a Zoom meeting. Anyway, the other thing that I wanted to talk about, we have, I think all of us, I know I have and a couple of other board members at least, have had comments, concerns expressed about our general manager's new contract, with updated contract is more accurate, in which Tom will be working remotely for roughly 3 out of 4 weeks each month, and with some exceptions to that. I reached out, you heard a little bit before about the California Special District Association. I reached out to our representative, Dane Bradley, to get from him if he knew any other agencies, special districts, who had general managers who work remotely. he gave me the names of three organizations with whom I had some, and then in some cases, minimal success in reaching. Let me just give you some highlights. And if anybody wants this, there's a two-page thing with write-ups from everybody contacted here, and I can get it to Kim, and she can print it out if anybody else would like it. Just let me know. First one I spoke with was the River Pines Public Utilities District in Amador County. They do water, wastewater, water rights, and the town hall. I spoke with a board member named Anita Ebbinghausen, who's been on the board for about 10 years, about their general manager, Candy Bingham, who lives in Blackfoot, Idaho. It's a real small agency. They have something like 215 customers. I called the 209 area code phone number to the agency. The person answered the phone. It was, in fact, the GM in Idaho. The phone rings directly on her desk at home. Basically, I'm not going to go over this whole thing. The staff doesn't have a problem with it. This is from the board member with whom I spoke. They also have a board clerk who lives in Nevada and has worked remotely for 3 years by Zoom. The quote is, she's great, and the only way we can keep her is for her to work remotely. And that was before COVID. In other words, they had a good employee they didn't want to lose, and they thought working remotely was just fine. Let's see. She's in the district 1 week a month.
Sparkus, Karen?
Oh,
no, the
clerk?
GM.
No, the GM.
Oh, you're back to the GM.
GM. I'm sorry, yeah. Okay. GM. Thank you. And one of the comments from the board member was, she keeps working with the state. We haven't seen any downside at all. Times are changing. We have to keep up with the times. Next, I talked to the Gardnerville Sanitary District in Humboldt County. I called their office, tried to get the person who answered the phone to get a board member to call me, as I did with the first one. What happened was that she was uncomfortable doing that, so she talked to the general manager, a guy named Ralph Emerson. His middle name is not well, though. Who lives in Murphy's, and this is in Humboldt County. It's like 5.5 hours away. I didn't get to talk to any of the board members. Both he and the person with whom I spoke basically said that I needed to send an email, which would be then forwarded to the board members. He was concerned about some violation of the Brown Act. I'm not sure what it would have been, but anyway, I didn't get any responses from any of the board members, but I did get his responses, which I found interesting. He has been with the district for 8 years and worked in the district for his first 5 years. He lives 5.5 hours from the district. He said the first few months when he was working remotely was somewhat difficult, especially establishing a daily routine, which he now has. He's in the district from the end of the third week until the end of the fourth week of each month, roughly 7 to 10 days each month. He said that with the staff that we have, which is larger than theirs, that he thought it would work, our new proposal would work just fine. I asked him about the staff's perspective, and again, this is his own perspective. He said, because I gave the first 5 years 100% and I'm still working 50 to 60 hours a week for them, they know I have their back. They don't ever make a hard decision without me. He talks to the secretary every day by phone and Zoom. He said there was public feedback. He said there was one agitator who doesn't even live in the district. He said he raised a stink and the board responded to him. He was concerned about how the public react, but he said that it works. He said ours will too if we have a GM who is conscientious and stays on top of things. Did I say we do?
Think we're good?
He said if your GM is doing the job, that's the important thing. It may not be ideal, but if it's the best thing for the district, go for it. If it doesn't work, fine. Hire somebody else.
So I told you to.
Yeah. So, and he also mentioned that, in addition to his duties as the GM in Gardnerville for the Murphys, he's also on the CSCA board. So,
there
you go. Wow. So, he's got his hands full. Speaking of which, then I talked to the Aspen Regional Solid Waste Management Authority in Susanville. They do all of the solid waste management in Lassen County. I spoke with County Supervisor Chris Gallagher, who is also on the board of the Lassen Solid Waste Management Authority, who has also been a GM working remotely in the past. So it's like we're not reinventing the wheel here. He said that their GM, they have a new GM, but he does not. They have the one that they had who retired something like in December, worked remotely for 2 years. He said he was good. That's why we kept him on, working remotely. He said he would come to some of the board meetings. We had an office manager, and we kept things going pretty well. He did not have a fixed schedule in the office, but this guy said that he thought it worked very well. He'd worked for us for a number of years before that, so he really knew the organization. He could run everything from his house. The staff was 8 people, from whom we heard no complaints. They liked Tom, which is the guy's name, not me, so much that they really didn't care. When he asked for community reaction, he said, I don't think they ever knew. He said he had been a GM at 2 CSDs, and when everything is going well, there's nobody at your meetings. Julie, no, you're the exception. Everything's going well. He said he gave people his personal phone number. Tom, you talk about the new phone system, if you would, when you get your report, if you would, what else did he say? Trying to hire someone who's qualified that would do a good job is extremely difficult these days. He left his job as general, he was also a general manager in Greenville, lived in Susanville. So he was working remotely for that job where he was a GM, in addition to being on the board of supervisors and the board of his other one. He said that he left that job in Greenville last September, and they have not yet been able to find a new GM. So, I think just the point of hiring a new GM in these times would be problematic, to say the least. In this climate, it's really difficult to find good qualified general managers. He said everybody's working from home these days after COVID. It's the way of the future. And he said, if you're really satisfied with his work, I wouldn't mess with that. You don't know what you're going to get. I'd encourage your board to go forward with it. And then a couple final things. Perhaps you've heard the name Pete Campa, who before he went to TUD and off into the great beyond, was the GM here. Pete is now the general manager for Groveland, major water, fire, sewer, and park. He's also the GM for Saddle Creek, which is no longer Saddle Creek. It's now the Copper Valley Community Services District. And they do stormwater, garbage, fire protection, mosquito abatement, street lighting, police, libraries, streets, culverts, gutters, drains, storage ponds, and wetland habitats, conversion of overhead electrical and communications facilities to underground locations, ambulance services, transportation services, graffiti abatement, and recreation.
Holy moly.
That's his part-time.
But he was doing 4 others besides 35.
Mm-hmm. Or 5, total 5 of them.
Yeah,
4 of them, exactly. And my snarky comment in here, it's hard to see how he wasn't working remotely for at least 4 of them at any one time. And my final thought on this is, Tom, you came here in 2013. Since 2013, can anybody give me a number of GMs that PUD has gone through?
Well, right now they have an interim because it's too hard to find a permanent.
Right. So
they've had multiple. That's the thing. Many multiple. So more than one hand.
So just to put it out for public consumption, my perception is that we have, without doubt, the best, most efficient, functional general manager of any special district, any governmental organization in this county. I don't want to lose you. For all the reasons above, I think this new system is going to work. I believe that it will. If it doesn't, we'll figure it out. But I'm just very happy we have you and you're going to stay there.
I don't see any reason why it's not going to work out. And personally, I don't want to go through hiring a new GM.
You ain't the only one.
I think the point is we all feel that way, and we're doing our research
so
that we can present facts to the community when they do have a problem.
And as I say, if anybody wants a copy of this,
I will.
You
bet. Thank you, President, for doing that research for us.
Yeah.
Because that is important to know that this is occurring, and it has occurred before COVID. I mean, I know that COVID has opened our eyes to what is possible, that paradigm shift, but it's nice to know that this has been going on and that this isn't all that unique. It's not Tom's plan or our plan. It's a tried and true. Right. This is an elephant.
Can you still point out CSD? It's on its way. That's my report. Any other board members? Then we go to, who's next? I'm going to get that handsome young man out there.
Anxiously waiting. So for June, the department responded to 27 incidents, 7 public contacts. And again, the public contacts, we loosened COVID restrictions, allowing visitors, not upstairs in living quarters, but tours of the firehouse, fire engines, and then doing just public contacts in-house. The picture you see there is one of our recent hands-on trainings from a group called Brothers in Battle. Her name is Andrea Tristrail, and she is the wife of Cody Tristrail, who owns Brothers in Battle. And again, with all of our hands-on trainings, we try to get it as much as what we call hyper-realistic as possible. This scenario is a victim throwing a baby out to a firefighter as they're trying to ladder a building. This was so realistic that 2 members from the public heard her screaming for help and ran down the hill to try to render help. So it was a very good training, nevertheless. We are working on a public notification. Once the new buyer of the new home on East Avenue is announced, we'll go by and visit. We're planning on doing some sort of open house for the neighbors to see what we actually do down there and kind of give them a feel of what we accomplish at the training ground. Some of the highlighted incidents for June. On June 23rd, we responded to a commercial tree trimming truck that lost its brakes and did a pretty significant damage of a home and a fence and a tree on Middle Camp Road at Good Shepherd. It was about 5.5 hour road closure due to the complexity of removing the truck and getting it towed. It was a complete loss for that company. It was one of the local companies. So
that's out of the district, right?
It is out of the district. First I'm seeing, June 30th, if some of you don't know, we do have an emergency designated emergency landing zone up at the Twain Hart Bible Church in the baseball field. This was a project that was given to me by Chief McNeil when I was training captain. So it was a pet project for me to get this thing set up that we have a designated emergency LZ for targeted constituents and the need that we need to get them to a trauma center or rapid care out of this county. So we were able to set that up for a medical aid that happened at the golf course where this individual needed to get flown out. It was very successful, and he got to a trauma center within, I want to say, 30 minutes. So that meets our what we call our golden hour to get any kind of patient to a trauma center. For personnel, our current staffing, 3 full-time captains, 5 relief, 1 intern operator, 3 intern firefighters, 3 reserve firefighters. And we do have an addition to our family. The Schuler family welcomed their new daughter, Charlie Jet Schuler. She came in a month early, 5 pounds, 17.25 inches long.
Has she been in training yet?
Not yet. So family's doing good, and yeah, we're excited to meet her one of these days. For fleet, nothing to report. It's a really good thing. All of the fleet is healthy. All the inspections have been completed, and we are happy not to report anything for fleet. For June, we accomplished some 6-month intern testing, which you saw today, as those interns getting their badges. Well-deserved, and we're very impressed by their dedication to the department, like we said earlier. We also had the opportunity, myself included, to help out with the CERT hands-on training. I have to say, we were in charge of the fire extinguisher station, and I was very impressed by the volunteers that we have at CERT and how well they work together. And if these are the people that we're going to be relying on to help us, then we are in very, very good hands.
And also, we have in CERT now, do you know? Ballpark.
Well, I don't know the number. I don't know if Carol's for long. I want to say 12, but I'm not sure that's the actual.
No, there's more than 12.
Well, there's so, active.
Active.
Yeah.
There isn't more than that.
Okay.
Also down here, we did a little training. Captain Slater brought his tree trimming setup to climb the tree and do some limbing for the internet antenna that we have here. So that was a good training opportunity for our guys for ropes and all. Again, with the training too, the Brothers in Battle class, 35 students from all over the state. I don't know if we had any out of state for this class, but it was pretty impressive when our wait list again was well over 35 on the wait list. And that was 1-day class, 4 days long. So very good draw for this class.
Where did they come from?
The actual cadre came from Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon. And Oregon, Cincinnati, they came from all over.
I love it. I'm just so proud of them.
Yeah, so am I.
Yeah.
We have a few interns out. We have a relief firefighter, Albert Derosier, actually just came back today. He was on the tent fire for about a week and a half. Intern operator Ober did a full 14-day deployment. Started out at the lava incident, then was redeployed to the Beckworth incident, which I will post some of the videos that he was able to obtain of some of the fire behavior that he saw there that was very impressive. A couple of the, we call plume-dominated fire behavior when that plume domination collapses and the erratic winds is pretty scary and some pretty impressive fire tornadoes. So I'll make sure I get some of those videos out to you. So the financial report, Paul mentioned we submitted a California Fire Foundation grant for a new emergency alert system. We are hoping to mimic what Tuolumne City Fire Department, which this is a picture of their emergency alert form. And again, Tom mentioned that we're trying to get these in sequence in coordination with Tuolumne County Sheriff's Department to be able to have the ultimate, what we call the red button, to hit them when they need to be hit. And then the public campaign, what goes with that. So, keeping our fingers crossed that we get this. It'll be hopefully ourselves. Tuolumne City already has one. Miwok Sugar Pine put in for one, and we're working on doing one for Strawberry Fire. Captain Nathaniel did submit his grant for CPR, the community CPR program. Included with that CPR program is the AED component and the Lucas machine, which is an automated CPR machine that actually does the chest compressions. It's been very successful in this county. Just last week, Groveland Fire had 2 field saves. They showed up on scene, the person was completely non-responsive, not breathing, and both of them made it out of the emergency room walking around.
Wow.
So they have a pretty successful success rate. So hopefully we get that and it'd be a great tool for the crews. For the Tuolumne County Fire Chiefs report, the discussion to reinstate a JPA between the organizations, the talks have been started, so we will be working on a plan, what that looks like. The JPA would be a benefit to all of the local districts for mutual grants, very similar to the regional grant that I administered with the FCDAs, and then just other grants that we could submit for down the road, and then using shared staff, and then what we're working on also is called the Move Up and Cover Plan. which basically would provide sheet coverage and then coverage of engines. If we were committed to an incident, we would move engines from other departments to cover our district and vice versa.
Yeah, that's not the same JPA that's established for the B.
It's going to be different since Measure B was voted down. They had to dissolve that JPA. So talks would now be, again, start up another JPA.
So JPA protection, something protection?
Joint powers.
Yes.
Joint powers of authority.
It's basically where more than one governmental organization combines in order to do something that benefits all of them together.
They have to have the powers. So with that, too, we will be finalizing for a document in September's chief meeting, so it will be brought to the board for a vote if we want to move forward with the JPA.
You think we will?
I don't see why we wouldn't.
I don't.
Yeah. Tolmie County Fire Department also did a regional grant, what's called an OTS grant, the California Office of Transportation Safety. We were awarded out of the $436,000, we were only awarded $136,000. So we were kind of discussing what we're going to do, how we're going to feasibly get the new battery-operated AutoX jaws of life to the agency. So the talks are still going on about that. And then again, we have our graphs for incidents and training, and that's all I have to report.
Any questions for the chief?
Thank you.
Thank you, Neil.
Thank you. You did a good job on your first ceremony.
Thank you. And just like any headliner band, I have a follow-up here, so.
Hold on.
Okay.
Sounds like a challenge to me. Thank you, Julie.
Yeah.
All right, a couple quick things. I want to thank Bill McManus as well, primarily for the recipe that Francis, we call it in the house the McManus tart. We still make it probably every 3 months or so.
There's an important legacy.
His legacy.
Francis tart.
Is Bill still on?
Yes.
Yeah.
He raised the hand.
Bill, you have something to say?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Awesome. Figured out how to make it where you can hear me. I appreciate the appreciation, and I miss my village.
Oh, we miss you.
I'm glad to see you guys are doing well.
Yes, we are.
I'll see you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
All right. And then I did want to let everybody know that you can open any emails for me. I was hacked yesterday.
Password 123 is not a good password.
Apparently not. It was a pretty good password, I think. But there's numbers and letters.
Yeah.
It's changed quite since then, so I think it's all right. But
first thing when I came into that, what are you trying to tell me?
Here? Yeah, I'm spending a lot of time responding to texts and phone calls.
To idiots.
Just like, are you, this looks fishy. So I am in communication with the IT guy to get straightened out. It looks like a very official email. That's like the worst part. Mm-hmm. So. Alrighty, a couple of things. What's new? So some of these, I'm just going to bring up some of the regulatory stuff that we have to go through. The revised coal form rule. Basically, the state and the feds will give us new rules on occasion or adopt new rules that somebody else already put into place. And that's basically what's happening is the state is adopting a federal rule that we were already following. So it basically won't affect us. There is some increased sampling if we do have any total call form hits. And the way, basically, when we do a water sample in the distribution system, we check for indicator organisms that could cause illness. Total call form is an indicator organism. Doesn't mean if it's total call form positive, doesn't mean you'll be sick. It's pretty common. It's everywhere. But it does indicate that there may be fecal coliform, which will likely make you sick, and fecal coliform indicates that there might be E. coli, which will definitely make you sick. So it's just, you know, updates on some of the rules, and we'll have to probably update our bacteriological sample siting plan, and that tells us that we need to sample so many sites so many times a week, you know, and then these are the places that we need to resample if we get any positives. And then the next one is for chlorate detection limit for the purposes of reporting. So anytime we have any positives for anything, we have to report that in the consumer confidence report. And that's something we issue typically in the springtime towards, you know, June. And so the detection is anything that is above the detection limit for the purposes of reporting. So you can see it's going from 0.004 eventually all the way down to 0.001. Again, luckily it won't affect us. There's no known sources of contamination upstream. However, you know, that can always change. We have no issues with our wells. So,
Lewis, before you move on, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 years ago, I went to some sort of a meeting down at the county about coliform.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember exactly what's her name, Amy? I think she did the presentation. I distinctly remember her saying, I would not myself or let any of my kids go near any of the rivers, waterways in this county because of coliform. That there was, that it was virtually everywhere.
It is everywhere. It's in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
You know, when you catch raindrops coming down, I mean, you're likely being exposed to it as well. It's on the dust from the soda. You know, it's not.
Yeah.
So in those circumstances, you know, local swimming holes that are monitored by groups such as Swan Our Lake, they have to actually test the waters for, you know, total coliform and their standards they have to meet. So if those numbers get too high, they'll shut down beaches. You see that quite often at oceans, you know, there'll be beaches out, that'll shut. That happens in Half Moon Bay quite a bit. It's common, but it's like, I mean,
it's not dangerous in itself.
But the total coliform is a dangerous thing.
Good.
Yeah. So we had a pretty busy month. Of course, our last meeting, we were in the middle of the Twin Heart Drive leak. We had to shut down the road. That was kind of a big deal for us. We had the contractor come in, and the contractor was phenomenal. They really did a really good job. I was really impressed with these guys. They were in and out as quickly as they could. You can see them pouring concrete. They were in touch with the county. And they pretty much knew the rules almost better than us about what they could do and what they couldn't do. And the reason you see them pouring concrete is that's the fastest way that we can get traffic on the road. Otherwise, we have to put sand and get compaction tests done and send stuff to labs. And there's trench plates that would have to go into place. So doing this concrete helped us so that when the time came to actually do the finishing pavement, we could get in and out quicker. Those guys were great. We look forward to working with them in the future on other projects. So we had a Tuolumne County leak at the full meter. See, they got a pretty large meter. I want to say it's a 2-inch meter. That's what it looks like when 2 inches flows. Luckily, it was on their side, but it's kind of nice. It's kind of cool to see large amounts of water flowing where it shouldn't be sometimes. And the next one's Marquee Valve Plate. That one, you know, that one was a deep one, just another leak that we had to deal with. It's all part of the Plano River Water District. We had a Cherokee leak. That one was the by where the priest lives, rectory, I believe it's called. And that was an interesting project. Guys got to learn a lot. It was a real tight situation, so. It's fun one to work on. We had the Shady Brook Reservoir Dam leak. So basically, we had a slight little gopher hole that was causing a leak, and those aren't good to have in some dams. So we had a sandbag pretty quick, lowered, And then within a few days, we hired somebody to come out and use shotcrete to seal it up.
I was hoping your guests would stay here for this.
So that was an interesting experience. And Tommy even got in there, got his hands dirty with sandbags. It was pretty neat. We happened to have PD available, so they were they were helpful with the guy actually runs the ditches. He's like, he has some ideas what we could do right away. It was pretty neat to have that around. I mentioned this first page. I'm sorry. So the number of customer calls was just slightly below average, but still pretty busy for us. We had 26. It was a busy month for us. I mean, summers can be typically busy, but in terms of water line breaks and leaks and just everything else we had going on, it's pretty busy. Well one generator is 100% operational. We figured out what all the issues were, and they are good to go. Well three, the electrical is hooked up, propane tank, that's good to go. Actually today, the contractor is testing it to make sure it's operational. So we're good to go there. We're about average time here, a little above average actually, a total of 10 sewer calls. Pretty busy for sewer projects and work. Twin Arch School realignment project, work started 7-7 last week. It was basically just establishing, getting the stuff there, the materials and equipment. We had to wait on a few of the utilities to mark out their stuff. We really didn't want to cut into anything, so we gave them a couple extra days. But they're working on that yesterday and today. They got everything exposed yesterday. That contractor is really good too, so we expect that project to be completed in the next day or two. The Tiffany Manhole platform project, seal posts have been ordered and it should be done today, maybe tomorrow. So we'll hopefully get that platform up. And that's basically, it's a really deep manhole in between Tiffany and the Twin Arch School ball field. And then we have an upcoming mono bench sewer project. It's replaced about 200 feet. We are in the process of gathering the bids and hopefully I'll getting a PO requested for that shortly. I added something to this. So, we've had some issues with getting a Class A license, to be able to drive our jetter around. We spoke with TUD on some of, things that they do in these situations. And they told us that you can actually derate these trailers. You just have to prove that they are below a certain weight threshold. And for these trailers, it's 10,000 and 1 pound. So we took it to a scale down at FBI and we got it weighed. And it was 9,800 pounds, something. It was under 10,000. That's with water in it. So went down to DMV and good to go. We'll still pursue the Class A licenses for several of the drivers to be able to tow our back trailer and also the other heavier trailers to tow some of our other heavier equipment. So on that front, we did have a large sanitary sewer overflow, SSOs. That's what happens when we have a blockage in our main or manhole and it comes out. Approximately 1,680 gallons was spilled, about 1,380 of it made it into the creek. We were able to stop about 300 gallons by creating a diversion at the same time as trying to unclog it. At a location along the creek near Fireside, we pumped approximately 20,000 gallons out of the creek into a nearby manhole to try to limit any contamination in the lake. We also did that again last week for 2 days, so it would probably be an additional 80,000 gallons those 2 days combined to try to help limit any contamination. We're currently monitoring back tees, as we call the samples, at a ton of sites. I mean, I haven't finished counting them, but we've recently been allowed to decrease some of the sites, but pretty much the lake was good to go virtually from the beginning. There was one set of samples that wasn't great, and that's part of why they shut down. I mean, they knew ahead of time to shut down, but the lake was in pretty good shape from the very beginning, so most of the contamination was isolated.
Lewis, would you compare, I'm not sure that's the right word, but have not we basically TV'd the entire sewer system?
Yes, we have. We did TV that area.
Okay.
That was part of the survey.
That was before the spill, right?
Yes, sir.
And is it something we missed and we didn't have a chance to get to it, or what happened there?
Well, it's kind of a combination of that Class A issue. It made it difficult to get out there without there being an emergency, and then as well as the COVID situation. In the beginning, when COVID was making its way out, it was thought that the spray from when you're cleaning sewer with a jet or you're putting a lot of spray particulates, that would be a mode of transmission. And they found a lot of COVID-19 in the sewers. Later, it was found out that it's likely not a great source of transmission. And that you're likely to get sick from the normal stuff than you are from COVID.
Which is what you guys are feeling like close to all the time.
All the time anyway. We have hepatitis shots for that reason.
Yeah.
The video did reveal there's some roots there, along with hundreds and maybe thousands of other spots.
Right.
Yeah.
When you look at the video, it doesn't look immediate at all. I think something else happened. And with the addition of debris
and sort of those, yeah.
From what we can tell, just from what we pulled out on top of the grease and on top of the Swiffers, we think that a piece of root broke off of the manhole, like the actual, like inside of the manhole, kind of just sloughed off and caused a blockage. So basically at that point, pretty soon thereafter, we were on the phone with PUD, and as you see here, and they assisted us with hitting the main trunks around the lake along Golf Club pretty hard. Their truck there has two different size hoses. For instance, we have a half-inch hose, and that goes about 2,500 PSI, and it only goes about 20 gallons a minute. They have three-quarter-inch hose, and that their pressure is a little bit lower, but they get a lot more volume through. So they were able to really help us knock that down. And then on top of it, I've done some rearrangement with the crew and how we do things to sort of prioritize and put into action exactly, you know, what needs to happen. So on the days of let's try to get cleaning once a day, once a week, or it's Jason and Thomas, you guys are doing collections. That's all you guys are doing. So there's been a shift. Dustin is taking over a lot more of the wells, and as well as Fred and Dustin will be doing a lot more of the distribution and park work. We basically have prioritized it in a big and heavy way, and you'll see that a lot more often. It's something that for me is really important that we knock down. The roots are really bad. And the thing with roots and sewer systems, you think of roots as being a slow-growing situation. I was speaking to one of the TUD operators, and that's all they do all day long, selection. We do a little bit of everything, and so they've got a really good bit of education to pull from. And they're saying in some places, when the scenarios are perfect, they will have roots. They'll clean out the roots completely, and within 3 months, the roots are back. You know, so. So basically, it's going to be hit real hard. This, to me, this can never happen again, and I'm sure that's the same for you guys. I mean, clearly, personally, it's embarrassing. It's environmentally not great. It's a knock on our department. I would like that for this to never ever happen again. Under my watch, hopefully, people in the future. Part of it is creating a culture that, you know, that guys know that this is what they're going to be doing day in and day out, We're going to utilize the GIS, so we'll be able to actually have reports. You can say, we did this many feet of line, you know, we did. So there's a lot coming out of this. And the neat thing is with having QD coming out and finding out that we can de-rate these trailers. CHP, talking to, you know, CHP, they're like, yeah, you can do it. It's a bit of a process. And they're going to the DMV, and it's like, looks like you did it. You're good to go. It's that simple. So so glad we got that done. For instance, in this picture, I'd like to point this out. That is two pieces of a manhole. Can you zoom in a little bit on that? It's circled in red. That manhole is broken in half. So we got that replaced, obviously. So that's the kind of the state of, you know, some of the collection systems that we really need to hit a lot harder. The neat thing about having that footage was, you know, when this happened and things settled down a little bit, I was able to dive into the camera footage and really look at what's going on, where it's happening. There's a lot of roots out there, you know, a lot of places.
You live in the woods.
We live in the woods. So,
that's why it's that much more important to camera footage and things like that, because those are just catchers, and you're just getting around all that.
Yeah. Good. Thank you.
A priority manhole project. So part of the manhole project is INI inflow and infiltration. So and also, you know, with this, we'll be able to, you know, doing a lot more maintenance, hitting these manholes a lot harder. So we're going to be clearing out a lot of the roots. Part of this issue, I believe, the previous one was roots inside of a manhole that got loose. So, you know, when we work on some of these manhole projects, like when I spoke with Jamestown, they have some pretty neat economical ideas for lining them. Fred has some pretty neat ideas on actually making sure to help put these new lids in that create a seal so the water can't flow into them. So we're looking forward to getting those projects, and I believe that's on this year's plan. So you'll see us, you'll see a lot more pictures of those kind of projects. The priority sewer main repair project. So when you look through the footage, it's interesting to actually see the damage. There's cracks, there's pieces of line that are actually just missing. They're just like, you'll look through it, there's no top. It's just dirt up there. And you can actually, they filmed all this stuff last winter or early spring. So you can actually see water coming in. You know, that's infiltration. And every time we have a storm, I get an email from TUD saying, hey, just so you know, you still got INI. So the cool thing was having TUD up, they really showed us a lot of cool little options for us. There's these patches that they can put in, and it's a few hundred dollars a pop. And they will help with those issues, like, really easily. And, you know, economically, we don't have to replace a whole line. We can just create these little patches, and it just helps us in the short term. Some of these lines definitely need to do a lot more work on, but these will at least help with some of the immediate issues that we're facing. They've also had a lot of really cool tools for the sewer that they fabricated. So Fred has already worked on fabricating a few tools to incorporate into our tool belt. To make our jobs easier and more effective out there. And we're going to be touring their collections facility, which is down in, I guess it's Sonora, Jamestown, their sewage treatment facility, where their collections department's based. And we're going to tour their facilities and see what they got going on. And just sort of, I mean, that's what they do. They're specialists in this. I mean, we're like general practitioners in this. So we can go down and learn a lot more and become even more well-rounded. Parks, and any questions about sewer stuff?
I really like the coordination between you and TUD. I think that's great.
It was really good. We got a pretty good relationship with them. Don Perkins used to work at Point Arch CSD several years back. He's their interim GM. He's a good guy to work with. Rich Pitcher, he runs their collections department. He's a super good guy. I've spoken with him quite a bit. And Gary, what's the distribution guy? Matt Nolte, their distribution supervisor, another super nice guy. And of course, I'm friends with a lot of guys in the treatment division, the water treatment division. So we've got a really good relationship with, you know, our big brother down the road. They're a bunch of good guys. They're all willing to help. We you know, so anytime we need any sort of assistance, you know, we know all of these folks that can come help us. And it's not just one way. We help them sometimes. So, you know, with the ditch outage, that's our season, they help us. So we provide a lot more water during ditch outage to a lot of PD when it happens. And so it's a good working relationship. So moving on to Parks and Rec, the Bocce Pavilion Rain Garden area. We're still working on the pillars. The Bocce is looking really good. Thank you to Chris. The park tank pump and irrigation lines, they're pretty much done. We are just waiting on getting the actual drain lines from the roofs to be, they just need to be glued. They're ready to go. We'll hopefully start filling that tank and run some tests. I want to say this week. I would love for it to be this week as soon as possible. I'm kind of excited about that. Because we have to, like, hand water everything every single day. It's like an hour. You have to soak it. I would love to be able to
turn it on
and so we can do other stuff. So the bridge for the rain garden is installed and insane. Dustin did that. He did a really good job. I really liked what, you know, the way it looks. I'm pretty proud of it. The community center generator update, contractors or the generator, we're still waiting on a delivery date. Those are traditionally a few months behind. I would like at least some sort of like, hey, 6-7 weeks. I've reached out to him recently, but he's on vacation, so I'm still waiting here. Special thanks to Chris for the stonework at the Bocce Pavilion. And TUD for the health and sewer lines, and of course the Winter Homeowner Association for the help putting up, putting together the picnic tables for the park and the Bocce line painting. They reached out and said, hey, we need this done. You know, we'd like to get this done. Can we help you? At first I thought we could handle it, and I was like, you know, it would be really great if they could do that for us. So they did, and they were like, yeah, we can get to it in a few days, but they were done within a few hours. So, yeah, I'm pretty thankful that they're able to, yeah, for them to do that. And it helps take a little bit of load off of ours, you know, and what we got going on. Like, we got a lot of sewer work to do. And so our guys, the workload, I feel almost like slave driver a little bit. I have put so much on these guys' shoulders, and every single one of them is really stepping up. I mean, I can't tell you how proud I am of the whole crew. Every single one of those guys is stepping up. And we have two new guys. And Tom Clemente and Dustin Summerdike, and those guys are learning so much so fast. I mean, not because they have to, because they want to. So I'm excited to see the team, you know, grow together as well as, you know, as part of the CFC.
We're proud of them too.
Yeah.
So we had a member and we made it so busy that I was
with. Yes.
So
it's like, I'd be able to work
fast.
It's almost like I don't know what we would do without having Dustin around. I mean, every single one of these guys works so hard. So now with that, there being a little bit of a division, it actually creates more work for people. So especially, I mean, just through our morning routines, we're not done with those until at best 9 a.m. That's just our every single day. So all the extra stuff that we got to do, whether it's with a leak or if it's in the treatment plant, some sort of maintenance and the park, that's all on top of just our normal routines. And, you know, of course, we got work orders that come in. So it's always a busy, full day. So.
Is Chris the taller guy?
Dustin, yes.
Dustin or Chris?
Dustin Summerdike. He's a tall one. Very tall. And so that's all I got. This is our normal production report. I don't know if you have any questions, Director Bowman, about it. The way it is, the treatment plant is how much we produce the treatment plant. You kind of see it's somewhat seasonal. Sometimes we have these spikes in the really cold winters, and that will have to do with whether or not we're able to run the wells or broken lines. Sometimes we just have a ton of service line breaks out there at customers' houses from frozen pipes. Well one, well two, well three, those are how much water well, one, you know, the neighborhood of 1 million gallons is about normal. Well, two, the neighborhood of 2 million gallons is about normal. And well, three, it's 1 million gallons is nice, but typically it's not that high. And that recycled gallons, so what that means is that when we have basically the process of running a facility, you have water that you need to sample constantly. They run through turbidimeters. We'll get you up for a tour if you'd like. And then we also have, when we clean our filter, that uses a tremendous amount of water, you know, like 20 to 30 gallons each time we clean a filter. And we'll clean a filter 1 to 2 to 3 times a week. So what we do is we capture that water, we let it settle, we pump it up to a basin, and we allow it to come back down about 10% of what we're making. So if we're making 100 gallons a minute, we're allowed to bring back 10 gallons a minute. So all that sample recycling and all that backwash recycling is what that, where that number comes from. So we have very little waste up there for water. And that total production is all the wells, the treatment plant, and then you can see that 2013 total production. Those are the numbers we gauge all of our production that the state likes us to use. Everybody uses that, and then that percentage can serve. You can see we've had some high numbers in the 30s and the 20s, but then we've had some 15s and 3s and 10s. And we're back up to 31.28 for June, and that could be because people are becoming more aware of the drought. It's, you know, it's becoming more real. And, of course, the rain and the snow.
And one thing to mention on that, too, this is production. So when oftentimes when we're looking at what we conserve is actual use through meters. So production is what comes out of the treatment plant, and meters is what actually is used in the house. But in between there, you can have leaks and other things that create a lot of water loss. And that's one of the things the water system planning grant can address.
It will help. The tour really makes this real, and it's kind of abstract right now. It does help.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to compliment, you know, Plano. When I was looking at the stats, I was like, 31% in June, that's awesome. So it must be making a difference. That's almost a third.
Yeah,
We did it.
And like Tom was saying, this is mainly on the production side, but that's, I mean, that those 2013 total production, it's, you know, it's, there is some water loss there. We did have quite a few leaks, but, you know.
Kudos to your crew. You've done a great job.
Thank you. One thing that Chief didn't mention is we have advertisement on the street for students to hire seasonal engineers to help with some of our low staffing numbers or low intern numbers. So if you saw us, we only had 4 total interns. Normally we have anywhere from 6 to 9. And so that's a result of Cal Fire's hiring. And so we're trying to get some 5-month full-time engineers on board. I think that closes tomorrow.
Right.
We talked about bocce dedication planning, and then I'm working through a lot of remote work transitioning. I leave on Friday. So one of the things that we are looking into and will have implemented probably within the next 2 to 3 weeks is an internet phone system that will replace our wired phone system. Mm-hmm. That essentially means that we're all connected all the time, just like this phone system does. So Mel can answer the phone and say, okay, they call for Kim, they call for me, transferring it goes right to me. All you need is internet access to be able to use that phone. It looks like a phone. You can also do it through your cell phone or through an iPad or through a computer. You can make phone calls. At least all the main people that have phones will have a direct voicemail instead of people leaving voicemails on the main one and Mel having to distribute that. It also has a lot of other cool things like auto attendant. So as soon as 4 o'clock hour hits, and you know, press 1 if you want the fire department, press 2 if you want. So there's a lot more efficiencies gained, but also will help us get to more of a seamless transition. As far as it won't matter if I'm in that office or
another state.
The other attendant will kick in if they just call during business hours. Please, please, please.
No, yeah, it will just be for after hours.
Right. So when the phone rings, no.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
The other thing that we're looking at is we're trying to create as much, actually permanent, but I think it's right now it's almost complete as far as having overlap for Melinda at all times. There would be two people in this office.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're almost there. One of the things that we're going to do for that, and we're not going to implement it right away because Carolyn's full time right now, but we're going to be transitioning office hours. We don't open at 7 anymore. We open at 8. And that enables people who need to do child care things to be able to get that done here at 8. And then instead of taking the lunch hour off, we're going to be open during lunch hour. So we open from 8 to 4, and so 7 to 4, but with the lunch hour open. And what we find anyway is that people don't really come here between 7 and 8, but a lot of people come during the lunch hour. So I think that'll be a better service. Customers
I like it.
So there's things like that that we're working on implementing.
You're going to announce it on the website.
Yeah, we'll have that all out. And those are some of the things that they might feel a little bit, just so you that they might feel a little bit like growing pains for a little bit, so we get them all in place. Make actually a better difference once they're functioning. Still working very hard on the stormwater grant agreement. It's required a significant amount of time to work with the State Water Board, but we're getting close. Talked about the Twainer Creek sewer spill and the dam leak. Talked about a lot of these capital projects. I can't remember if Lewis mentioned or not, but the school realignment is happening. Yes. And that is to correct an area where there's a big job where we have significant backups in the school field as well. Lots of grants to deal with, and have a couple coming up for the park as well. One in November. Hopefully we'll find out about the other park one that I submitted in August. They say late summer. Typically I have 3 or 4 months, whatever they say. And that's when they come out. We're supposed to hear back any day about the grant for SCBAs, which is a huge, it's like $150,000 grant to replace those. That's going to be huge if we get that. That's any day. They restarted the drought task force, the county did, which Lewis and I attended last week. The great thing too, going in the future, I mean, Lewis is going to be available to attend those things if I'm not here, but everything the county is doing, they have mandated that it be offered both virtually and physically. So that is something to show that more and more that is happening in the future. I did attend the General Manager Leadership Summit a couple weeks ago, which was excellent, except for the fact that a lot of it I had to be back and forth doing sewer spill. And so I did most of it. I think to sit in the back and get up.
Where was it?
It was in Tahoe. They always have them in the worst location.
I feel your pain, brother.
He was in Olympic Valley, which is pretty close to where or
something.
That's all I have, unless you have
any questions. Anybody else have anything?
Let me just say, I will be so just so you know my schedule. I've been back after work. I'm packing my trailer. We're leaving on Friday. I'll be out for all of next week. I'll be back remotely the following.
Yes. We actually give you vacation time.
Yeah.
What were we thinking?
Will you be having a new cell phone contact or new?
No, same. Everything will be the same.
So texting would still work and those kinds of things?
Texting, email, all that stuff. Whatever. Whatever mode of communication is your favorite, I can do.
Yeah, I know.
You're joining us a buggy next week.
There are a lot of us.
We'll be carrying the torch, right?
Oh, yes.
We'll be calling you.
Okay. And I'll probably still be available unless I'm driving through Nevada where there's no services. But other than that, if you're welcome,
stay away from the casinos.
Mm-hmm. Where we're driving, I don't think maybe they're
cactuses.
So what is your August
schedule plan look like right now, do you think, going forward now?
So I already have my, I already have set up for, okay, for August. I got my tickets and everything for, just so you know, it's like $95 for a trip.
Yeah, wow.
So yeah, I will be here. I'm coming in on the 11th and leaving on, no, coming in on the 9th and leaving on the 13th. So coming in on Monday, I fly in super early on Monday and, mm-hmm, and get to, yeah, Sacramento around noon.
It's not, yeah, a long flight, I know that. It's 2 hours. Yeah.
And then I'm leaving in the afternoon on Friday.
On Friday.
Cool. What airport on the other, just curious?
Sacramento.
Sac
to Denver.
Denver.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And where I, where my new house is, it's about the same distance from here to Sacramento.
Okay.
I'm just order you.
And then we,
be careful.
And we don't have committee meetings till September.
Right. Correct. Correct. And
it's going to be a good test, a good month to test things, since it's only the one meeting.
Right.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm planning as of right now to be here the whole week at the board meetings and then to zoom in on for the committees.
Okay. So that's,
yeah, that makes sense. That's amazing. Okay. You get it during COVID, I don't think you can do it now. Yeah. And yes, exactly. And again, this is all like, this is all flex. So this is always, it always is our best intention, and then we evaluate as we go along. And, yep, and so I'll be relying on you to help communicate what's not working or what is working so that I can flex and adjust to make sure that we come up with what works.
Well, I would encourage all my colleagues to just keep your ears to the ground,
mm-hmm,
see what kind of poop is thrown up about this.
I'm fully confident in you.
I am too. I guess.
Well, we are. But that doesn't mean,
yeah, and so is staff.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's,
most people I've talked to in the community have been fine as well.
Simply.
You know what? Those people that have complained to me, I will say, just don't like the idea of that. Give it 3 months from when it starts, not 3 months from the rumors of Tom's not living here already. And you don't even know if he's here or not. COVID, nobody knew where anyone was.
Right.
And not one of these people that have talked to me has ever been to a meeting.
Yeah.
But they just don't like the general idea that you're gone. So I think as long as things go smoothly, like everything else, we never have anyone into a bigger problem. So I'm anticipating a nice, smooth transition, at least to start, because that will make it easier for everyone to, like, not even realize what's happening.
No. And the vast majority of us will have no clue. They'll see us continuing to provide great service.
It's just the thought of it they don't like, but also,
yeah,
you know,
how to do it.
Well, yeah, it's perceptions.
Yeah.
So I'm,
yeah,
hoping they're not.
And the feedback that I got with people that we talked to, I mean, I don't see a reason why it shouldn't work. I mean, it works in other places that I think are not nearly as functional as we are. I think we have far more redundancy than a lot of places do.
Well, once again, I think it's also a lot of misinformation.
Yeah.
Basically, by the person that started
the
other campaign,
coming from
been out there spreading
source,
lots,
yep,
of stuff,
yep,
like,
yep,
4 days a year, you know, like, yep, weird things. So I think once the community hears it, I was disappointed. Because I expect if there is a problem, most people talk behind your back instead of putting their money where their mouth is. And I think maybe at the big meetings, the late meeting is this Saturday, homeowners is in September, that one we'll hear, if we're going to hear things, not some members of the community might. We need to be, but like I said, we're doing our research.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll give you, I'm working on just a kind of real basics statement to kind of, so that staff just what they need to
answer.
They need to answer some things. I mean, really, the most of the questions people ask are not even appropriate, but I'm happy to answer any questions that people have, even if they're about my personal lives and all that kind of stuff. And I will, and you can pass anybody on to me if you feel like you don't want to talk to me. I do that. Honestly, I have no choice. I could stand in front of a room at the homeowners meeting or whatever and tell people what I'm doing and why.
I plan on it.
And oh, I know they want that, but it's like they want that because they think it's going to destroy something. But
no.
We don't have anything to hide. We're doing really good work, and we're going to continue doing really good work. And so, you know, eventually that always rises. That's what we're going to continue to do.
Now, when we have committee meetings, just for clarification, and we're not able to be here, we can Zoom in as well, correct?
Yes. Yeah. You just let me know at a time that I
September.
Can make, yeah, then I can make you a panelist. I'll make you a panelist, and it's just like how we did with COVID, and you can just join us.
I'll be back for board, then I'll be gone for committee, please.
But I think our state should always be that way as well, because we provide both options.
Yes.
That way people can attend. We have several
cities.
I think I may not be here for the October meeting.
No, you're not. I won't let you go.
You
can do it in France if I can do it in Florida. They both start with the word S.
They're both far away. I don't think I can do it from the earth.
Try.
Okay.
Hey.
Okay. Then it is 12:05 and
we are.